Across the UK, online and on DAB. Access all radios.
Talk radio. Give it some lip. Talk radio.
Stay tuned, dear listener, in 10 seconds. Well, a few minutes, actually. We're going to have Eddie Large. Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with her up. I've never been with anything less than a man so fine. I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone past with a girl named Bo, but somehow they just don't end up as mine. It's a death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for living in the movies and TV. But the hardest thing I ever do is watch my leading ladies kiss some other guy while I'm bandaging my knee. I might fall from a tall building. I might roll a brand new car. 'Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that made Redford such a star. I've never spent much time in school, but I've taught ladies plenty. It's true, I hire my body out for pay.
Hey, hey!
I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Raquel Welch. But when I wind up in the hay, it's only hay.
Hey, hey!
I might jump an open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine. 'Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.
We've decided recently that we are going to get invite people on the show. Well, you know, I only get people on the show that I really like, okay? Very, very rarely will we get someone who's got a new book or a new tour. Occasionally we do. Coincidentally, in fact, I've just emailed a guy called Harold Bronson in the States who set up Rhino Records, a really cool record label. Asked if he'd come on. He said, oh, I've got a book coming out in April. Can we do it then? Beautiful. He'll be a brilliant guest. We normally just get people on the show. Good evening, dear listener, by the way. My name's Ian Lee. Welcome. That I like, that have had some kind of impact on me, that have meant something to me personally. And, you know, we had lovely Tommy Cannon on last week, and we're working on getting Bobby Ball on, and a name that keeps popping up is Eddie Large. And, well, I'm pleased to say Mr. Eddie Large is on the phone now. Good evening, Eddie.
Good evening, Ian.
How you doing, man? You all right?
Yeah, not bad, thanks.
Now, are you all right? Because you've been very ill. You've had a couple of setbacks the last couple of years.
You'll have to give me till 11 o'clock to tell you. Well, I mean, obviously everybody doesn't know, but I had a heart transplant in 2003, not a bypass, a transplant.
Flipping heck.
And when I tell people, they say, oh, have you met the donor?
Have you?
Honestly, not yet.
No, that'll come one day.
And so that was 2003. So if I make it to June this year, that'll be 14 years. Aye. 14 extra years I've had. So that was. And recently, 3 years ago, I had a fall. I had pancreatitis. I nearly died twice.
Yeah.
And but apart from that, yeah.
Apart from that, I mean, you say it was a fall. I've been reading about it. It was a nasty thing. You tripped over. Was it the sign you tripped over and you broke ribs?
And I tripped. I went into the hinges, the steel sort of hinges. It was a road closed sign.
Jeez.
So I fell into all the hinges and cracked 3 ribs and collapsed lung, got pneumonia. Nothing I'm not used to.
No, exactly. They said you were going to die, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I went back and to see the consultant a few weeks after going out, and I inquired about a bloke who was in the next bed to me, and I said he wasn't expected to last the night, and they said, well, neither were you.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean? He said, you nearly died twice. I said, well, we died a lot more than that on stage. And he told me to stop being so flippant, but I didn't know until going back for the consultation.
Didn't it make you think, though, how fragile it all is?
Yeah, but I never saw the white light. I was really upset.
You never saw the white light. You never saw anyone saying, go back, Eddie, it's not your time. It's not your time.
There's people dragging me through. That was all I could remember.
Eddie, now listen, you may not... we have met and we have worked together.
I know we have, I know.
Do you remember on The Weakest Link?
Yeah, Jim Boyan, he blew me out, didn't he?
He did, and I've got to confess to you, Eddie, I cheated a little bit on That Weakest Link.
You didn't, and I've admired you ever since.
I know! I tell you why. For those who don't know, it was The Weakest Link, it was a comedian special, I don't know what I was doing on there, but the final three, it was me, and you were stood next to me.
Yeah.
And right on the other side, it was Jim Bowen, right? And now, I can't remember what I think I'd voted Jim. Yeah, this was it. I'd originally written Jim, and then I kind of saw that you'd written me. So I rubbed out Jim, and I wrote your name, and I feel terrible saying this. I don't know if you can get done for this 10 years later, but I wrote your name down.
Oh, no.
And booted you off.
You didn't, if you think back...
Go on.
You voted for me, I voted for you.
Yeah.
And Jim Boyan, my chum of 40 years,
yeah,
voted for me.
He stitched you up double, didn't he?
He did.
Absolute git. Still did. That was a good night, that. I was terrified.
Was Bernard Manning was on that show.
Bernard Manning was on.
Voted out first.
All of... Because it was very loosely, it was old school versus new school. And it was a very loose definition. And all the new school people, including me, I'll be honest, you know, I was a different man 10 years ago. It was more than that. We all said, right, let's vote Bernard Manning off first. It was quite mean-spirited, all in all. No one banked, though, Eddie. No one would bank the money. Couldn't believe it. Still, we've got 20 grand for charity, so you can't knock that. I've been fascinated by you and your career, Eddie, and I was wondering how you got started, and I'm going to guess, because I've spoken to Bernie Clifton recently, and I've spoken to Cannon and Ball recently, or Cannon, I'm going to guess you started off as a singer.
Yeah.
You all did?
Correct, yeah.
You all did. How did you get into it, Eddie?
Well, I used to knock around with my mates when we were teenagers, and we'd go out to various pubs. And at about 10 o'clock, I'd get up and sing a song that I liked. Yeah. I even sang Lipstick on Your Collar, which wasn't quite a male song to sing.
No.
But I didn't even think of the words, and everyone was laughing. And
yeah.
I thought, oh, I'm doing well here. Then I realised what kind of song it was.
Mm.
And then we met up with Sid. We used to go to a ballroom in Sale near Manchester as teenagers. I went looking for girls, and I met Sid. And his mate said, Sid sings and plays his guitar in this pub every Friday. You should come and see him. And I went and seen him. And normally, they were talking about 1959 now.
Yeah.
Normally, in the music in the pubs was old Nellie Dean and My Old Man Said Follow the Band.
Yeah.
And Sid's up there singing songs out of the charts, or the hit parade, as we called it.
Yeah.
Of course, at 10 o'clock at night, everyone suddenly transforms into Elvis or Tom Jones or Johnny Ray in those days, and including me, Cliff Richard. So I got up with him, and I said, you know Living Darling? Because Sid knew me. He went, yeah, all right. So I do me Cliff Richard. I go to get off, and they're all cheering, mainly our mates anyway. Do another one. So I didn't know any more songs. And Sid was going to launch into Rubber Ball, the old Bobby V song.
Yeah, of course.
So he launched into that. I'm still on stage. When it got to the bouncy, bouncy bit, I started bouncing all around the stage. Just like, it just was something to do. And not trying to be deliberately funny.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just like acting the goat.
Yeah.
And that really started it all. They were all laughing and saying, how can Sid keep his face so straight? Sid was concentrating on his guitar chords. You know, that's all. He wasn't bothered about what I was doing. He was trying to make sure the music was correct.
Yeah.
And that's how it started, really.
Isn't it funny? Was there a meeting with you and Sid where you went, hey, we should carry on doing, we should work together and get a little act going?
No, we never did. We never took it serious.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, when we decided to be an act, we got invited to this pub every Saturday because we would work for nothing and we'd have about 14, 16 mates and girlfriends, etc. And so we started learning songs because we were just singers. We keep Rubber Balling because it went down well.
Yeah.
And occasionally someone gives us a sombrero, so we decided to do Speedy Gonzales. where I would run around the room and everything like that. So we had a few little novelty things, but it wasn't out-and-out comedy act. So anyway, Sid's working, he's getting a fiver a night at this working man's club, and I went to see him. He's doing two spots, and his amplifier kept breaking down.
Mm.
So his brother, who was an electrician, he went on stage trying to fix it, and they came to me in the interval. He said, will you get up with our Sid in case his amp breaks down? So I said, yeah. We knew about four, five, six songs maybe. So I go up with him. First song, his amp breaks down. So I don't know what to do. I've never been in that position before. Yeah. So anything that came into my head, I was doing like, Popeye, Olive, oh, the guys, okay, Ludo, not even doing jokes, just doing voices. Hi, Bernie, hello, Fred, and Deputy Dog. I'd hurt me hand. I'd had a bandage on my hand.
Yeah.
And I'm going, hey, Muskie, I'm old Deputy Dog. I'm looking for the guy that shot my paw. Anything. It was incredible. Bill and Ben the Flop-Up Man. Always. Anyway, he gets his arm fixed, and we finish off, and we went down a storm.
Yeah.
So we go in the room, and the fellow that books the acts comes in. He said, I want to book you. So Sid gets his diary out. He said, no, the both of you.
Oh, right.
So I'm just about to say, we're not an act. And he said, I'll give you £6. So now then, Sid's on a fiver, on his own. If he goes with me, he has to take a dip of £2.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? As easy going as he always has been. Oh, all right then. And that was when we had to get an act.
Yeah.
We had to take it serious.
And how did you do it? I mean, because there is, I mean, there's nothing like that pressure of standing in front of an audience when, you know, when all the technical stuff has, you know, there's gone wrong and the amps and the lights aren't working and you've got to just think on your feet. But there's only so much of that you can do. Were you just like going around to each other's, you know, houses and sitting in the kitchen and bashing stuff out?
Yeah, we only used to learn songs.
Right.
And the comedy came from other comics, especially around Manchester, and they would say, you know, your mate is very thin. Why don't you say he can do a hula hoop through a polo mint? We thought, well, we'd never heard that before. We thought that was an original joke, so we'd do it. He has to run around in the shower to get wet. We'd do that. He was on the beach today with his swimming trunks, looked like a flag at half mast. He was in the film Lassie, played the lead. And they give us all these jokes, so slowly but surely, we're building up repertoires, and then things would happen in the clubs, and you'd sort of ad-lib something, or we'll keep that in, etc., etc. And that's how it just evolved. There was no sitting down saying, you say that, I say that, none of that.
When did you get your first... Was TV the first break? You didn't do any radio stuff, did you?
No. Opportunity Knocks in 1971.
Right, OK. So and that was... For those who don't know, the kids listening, that was the X Factor of the day, wasn't it? Everyone thinks the X Factor and all this stuff is new. It's not. It's been going forever, the talent show.
That's very true, yeah. And of course, if you got on that, there's millions watching you, and you could go around the clubs for years, and you'd never work to a million people.
Yeah.
So we went on that, and we won it, and that sort of, that was one rung on the ladder, if you like. And then all the television work started coming in, did Who Do You Do, 1973, 74, and that helped us a lot. And on and on and on until we got our own series in 77.
Do you remember the first time you got recognised because you'd been on TV, where someone went, oh, blimmin' it, look, that's that fella that was on telly last night?
Yeah, I do, because when we was on Up Knocks, we used to do this thing, I don't know why we did it, it was like for in the summertime, and they used to put two fingers in, not two fingers in a V sign, one finger for each hand, and I'd be going, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. I don't know why we did it, but it caught on. And we're following in the car a couple of nights after we'd done it, after being on TV.
Yeah.
And the kids are looking out the back, and they started, I could see they recognised us, and they started doing this.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, we were so pleased about that.
Isn't that lovely? I remember I did a much smaller TV show years ago, and the night after the first one went out, we went out and did some filming, and some bloke started talking to me, and I was going, what is he talking about? And the cameraman said, he's quoting what you said on the TV last night. And it's weird, isn't it, that suddenly this stuff you do, you know, you do it to 200, 500 people in a club, suddenly it's millions. It's very strange.
I mean, you spoke about Tommy Cannon before.
Yeah.
We actually worked with Tommy and Bobby in about January 1964. I've got it written down somewhere.
Yeah.
And we were called Sid and Eddie, and they were called the Harper Brothers. They were a singing act.
Yeah.
So they went the same path as us. Comedy pays more, we'll do some comedy.
This is exactly what Tommy said. Exactly what Tommy said. He said we got a couple of quid more if we did jokes. So that's what we did. Yeah, I love it. When did you got the opportunity, Knox, and again it's really hard to you can't hammer home how big that show was in a period when we only had three TV channels.
That's right.
It was everybody watched that. You know, it was the big thing. How did you then go to getting your own TV series?
Well, what happened, after Opportunity Knox, the producer, a fella called Royston Mayo, he kept championing us to the Thames. Oh, let get the lads, get them to series, get them to series. No, they're not ready, all this. So in 76, we did a pilot show.
Yeah.
And it was shown on a Monday night, just before Christmas. So it was shown at 8 o'clock, just after Coronation Street. So we had that built-in audience. Yeah. And it got a very good reaction. And that's when they gave us our television series. And I only found out Royston Mayo produced it and directed it. And he told me that Huey Green was in the control box the night we recorded our first television show.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite, because he's always portrayed as something different, but he really cared about the acts.
Yeah. And again, it's funny, speaking to Bernie Clifton and Tommy Cannon, and you've said the same thing. The producer said, they're not ready yet. Not ready yet, which is incredible, because nowadays you turn on the TV and you know, I don't begrudge them getting the gigs, but it's all kids. It's all kids that you think have probably maybe done a couple of years on the circuit. And back then it was that thing, they're not ready yet. I'll check in every 6 months, but they're just not quite there yet. And that's great, because you get to learn your characters, your relationship with your partner, all of that stuff.
Because we weren't doing... I mean, I've only ever been in one comedy club, but I suspect they're of the same ilk, I suspect. Well, we weren't doing that, and Tom and Bob and Bernie and all that. We were doing miners' clubs in the northeast, and they'd come to Manchester and do, like, a cabaret club or Bernard Manning's club, and then we'd go to Yorkshire and do all the working men's clubs there, and South Wales, all the clubs up the valleys. So there's always various things.
Yeah.
You know, we'd storm them in one club in the valleys, and a mile away we'd dine a death, you know.
Mm.
And they checked you the night before, and they're going, why didn't you do as well as last night, you know?
You're playing in India, were you, Eddie?
Sorry about that.
Now, you were on the BBC for most of your career, weren't you?
Because I'd
forgotten you were on Thames.
77 till 91.
Right.
I mean, Eric Adelney did 69, sorry.
Right.
Till 77.
Yeah.
We were actually there longer than Eric Adelney.
Isn't that funny?
Which is a sort of feather in our cap, or maybe not.
Well, I was going to say, I was saying this to Cannon and Ball, to Tommy about Cannon and Ball. Do you ever feel that you're placed, what you achieved is kind of overlooked, because you do hear about Morecambe and Wise. Everyone forgets that when they went to Thames, their shows were nowhere near as funny as the BBC stuff. And things like Cannonball, Little and Large, you kind of, you know, you're in their shadow a bit. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, definitely in the shadow, yeah. The thing where they were very, very clever, I think, for about 5 or 6 years, they only did one show a year.
Yeah.
And everyone looked forward to that show.
The big Christmas special.
Turning out series upon series upon series. And eventually you just become like talking wallpaper.
Yeah.
You know, they're so used to seeing you, and then you'd be getting criticised. You're going, oh, not them again. But Eric and Ernie were very clever just to do one show a year, so you could put all your energy into that one show.
Yeah.
And they were brilliant doing it.
What numbers, what kind of audience figures were you getting for your show?
Well, I was talking this yesterday, something else we're not giving credit for. I've never forgotten the date. It was, I think they'd been on strike at the BBC, and they went back on Saturday. I think it was the 23rd of December. It was a Saturday night. And we got 18 million viewers.
18 million? Yeah. Flipping
I think we got the sack because we dropped down to 9-10 million.
Would that, they would,
if they got that today.
Oh, they'd go nuts to get 10 million today, wouldn't they?
They would, yeah, they would.
18 million, and again, it's, you know, I think there are too many, I don't really watch much TV now, Eddie. I think there are too many channels, and I've got two little boys who are 7 and 5. When I was a kid, kids' TV was on, I don't know, 4 o'clock till 5:30, and you'd all watch the same stuff. You go to school, you talk about that. Kids now, they've got like 200 channels, so no one's watching the same stuff. And the same with the adults. hardly anyone's watching the same stuff, so they go into work the next day and go, flipping it, did you see what was on ITV last night, 8 o'clock? That shared experience has gone a bit, I think.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I haven't thought about that. I was only saying to my wife the other day about tonight, actually, some show was on, and I said, we haven't heard many people talk about that. You know, it was sort of on one of the major channels.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. I think that's a point well made, that they're not all watching it like we used to.
No, and you can watch it at different times. You can go and watch it on iPlayer, and I don't know. I think there's something missing. I like that. I know that we don't, because we don't watch that much TV, but I do wonder as well, you look at TV on a Saturday night, and I can't really imagine families all sitting around watching Pop Idol. Maybe they do all sit around and watch Pop Idol together. I don't know, but it just feels... Family entertainment became a bit of a dirty phrase, and I think that's such a shame. And your show, Cannon and Ball, it was family entertainment. You could have you could have a six-year-old kid and an 80-year-old granddad, and you could sit there and laugh at it.
Well, I mean, the example I can give you, my granddaughter's 17 and 14.
Yeah.
They've got tellies in their rooms, they've got iPads, they've got everything. The mum and dad rarely see them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, listen, when I said you were coming on, loads of people got in touch going, this is brilliant, when's Eddie coming on? But I've had several people send me a very disturbing photograph.
Oh, no.
Yes. It's you...
That has actually been added to. I'll tell you.
It's you and Sid stood there topless.
I know.
Looking very... Where the hell is that from?
Well, that was from a slimming thing in 1974.
Right.
They did a slimming thing in, I think it was The Sun. And it was all about why does little eat more than large? And little does little, and large eats little, but he's large. It was one of them.
Yeah.
So they had a picture. Can you take your tops off? Yeah, we want to go your belly to belly. Show Sid's I've got a belly, and my belly, and that. And could you turn around and just have a photograph taken? Yeah, okay. We'd never in a million years think this photograph's ever going to come up. Because when it is shown on the net, people are going, oh, that is dreadful. Oh, who put that on? Oh, that's disgusting. I think, well, we didn't put it on. We didn't even know it existed.
I thought, isn't it funny?
Be careful what you do.
You can't hide from anything now. Photo taken 40 years ago, and I'm getting sent it in my... in my emails. Do you miss it, Eddie? Or I'm imagining that there is an element of retirement going on now after, you know, being poorly and stuff. Do you miss the thrust of being on telly, or are you quite content now?
I don't, actually.
No.
No, I don't. I mean, the travelling always kills you, as every entertainer will tell you. But I don't miss it. I mean, I've just turned down, I won't say what programme, because it'll sound bad. But
The Jump. Was it The Jump?
Recently, because my health wouldn't have managed it.
Yeah.
But, I said that as an excuse, but in reality, I can't be bothered. I feel that I've done it all. And, I'm 75 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we had quite a physical act where I was all dashing all over the stage. This is the live act, I mean.
Yeah.
And Sid just stood there like a maypole that I ran round.
Yeah.
So I couldn't physically do it anymore.
Honestly, it was such a thrill me doing that Weakest Link, and I think I got in because someone pulled out at the last minute, and to be with all these people and to be stood next to you, genuinely, you know, the child in me was over the moon. It was such a thrill. You said something, which I hope you won't mind me sharing, that actually broke my heart. In a quiet break in the filming, I leant over and said, you see much of Sid these days? And you said, no, we haven't spoken for a while. And I just wondered, and I hope this isn't insensitive, I just wondered what your relationship is with Sid, if you have one.
Did I actually say that to you?
Yeah.
Well, that surprises me, that. Well, if you say I said it, I must have said it.
Well, no, but, well, I hope
no, it's just that I spoke to him today, I spoke to him yesterday,
okay.
I spoke to him the day before, I spoke to him the day before.
Oh, bloody hell.
We phone each other every day like two little old men that should be in a home.
Well, this was 10 years ago, I suppose. Maybe I've misremembered it, Eddie. There's a very strong chance that I've misremembered it, and I apologise if that's the case.
No, can I tell you what did happen, Ian? Someone phoned me up, a journalist, and said, do you ever see Sid?
Right.
I said, no, I haven't seen him for a long time. He lives in Fleetwood. I live in near Bristol. So the thing in the press was, do you ever speak to Sid these days?
Right.
And I said, and then it said, I haven't spoke to him for years. He lives in Fleetwood. I live near Bristol. And then someone, Frank Skinner even put something on the net, said, there's this such things as telephones. I said, I didn't say that. I was after to see him.
Yeah.
Did I talk?
Well,
that's why I said it surprised me when, if I said that.
Yeah, well, maybe it was a long time ago, and maybe my brain is confusing. That does happen, unfortunately.
We're more friendly now than what we were. Because he runs a restaurant in Fleetwood, and it's like phone a friend. People go in.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember you and Eddie at this club and all that. I remember. And I get a phone. Who was the compere at the Southern Sporting Club? Someone's asked me. Paul Kendall. That's it. 5 minutes later. Who was the compere at the Golden Garter in Winningshot? Kevin Kent. That's it. So it's like
how
that.
Funny.
You know, we were with him last year at a charity ball.
And how's he doing? Is he all right?
Yeah, he's working too hard. He's given up. He's doing a lot of cruises and things.
Yeah.
But I think he's giving all that up now to concentrate because he doesn't want to travel.
Yeah.
I mean, he's younger than me, but he's still not a young man.
And but, you don't fancy doing one more show together?
No. We were asked. There's a show coming out soon. I probably shouldn't talk about it. But there's a show coming out soon where they get acts in our sort of age group.
Right.
To go to Las Vegas, and they look behind the scenes, and then at the end of the whatever week, the last week, they actually perform in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I said, I mentioned it to Sid, and he said, do they know how bloody old we are? And that's the crux, really.
Yeah.
The age and the not being able to do it physically. They'll find people to do it.
Who was how did your working relationship work? Was one of you kind of in charge, or was it 50-50? How did it work?
Well, it was mainly me, really.
Right.
You know, Sid used to think of some great ideas, you have to say that. But, yeah, I was made the boss. So if we were going to a theatre and they had four tickets left, the agent had phoned up and say, you've got to sell those four tickets. Eddie Lars won't like it. I got that reputation. They come in, hello, Mr. Lars. No, you can call me Eddie. It's a sellout. I hope you don't. Oh, that's good. The fearsome reputation, especially with writers on our show.
Yeah.
They'd all agree, I don't think he's that good. And it's always me. Eddie doesn't think he's any good. You meet him later in life and say, oh, you got me the bloody sack from the BBC. I never said it.
Eddie, listen, it's such a thrill to talk to you, and I'm glad you cleared up that my misremembering there, because that made me a bit sad. So that's, I'm really glad that, you know, you sound very content and very happy with the way things are going at the moment.
I am.
Thank you so much, Eddie. I really appreciate your time, mate.
Talk to you.
Anytime. Thank you, buddy. Take care. There we go. Eddie Large. What a nice bloke. As I knew he would be. It couldn't be anything else. I'm so glad he's corrected me on that misremembering of what happened on that weakest link. Nicest bloke. There we go. We'll put that out as a special podcast tomorrow. And Eddie, of course, has an open invitation anytime he wants to come on the show and have a chat. 75. Where is time going? Late nights with Ian Lee. I will work twice as hard this evening. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. We've got no calls on the switchboard. Give us a call. I'll speak to you after this.
Unmissable late night radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late night Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Oh, I love that. Could have chatted all night. I felt a little bit uncomfortable that I'd misremembered that conversation, but I just checked with Kath afterwards and he had the time of his life. We'll get Eddie back again at some point. And do you know what? Maybe we'll arrange a little trip down. He lives in Bristol, round that way. It's not too far from me. It's an hour and a half in the car. Maybe I'll pop down there one day and take a couple of microphones and have a chat with him there on his home turf. That might be nice, mightn't it? Yeah, that was lovely. Oh, and I'm glad that, because I had that thing in my head that him and Sid weren't speaking. And I'm glad that they do, and I'm glad that Sid phones him up to pick his memory. That was lovely. I really enjoyed that. We've got Bernie Clifton. We're probably going to play the Bernie Clifton interview on Thursday. I think on Thursday night's show. I think I think we're still kind of... We've got Rick Wakeman as well that we recorded. Jill Gibson, who was the third mama in the Mamas and the Papas. That's a doozy. We might play that when I get back. I'm having a week off next week. I'm going to meditate for an entire week. That's what I'm going to do. I'm switching my phone off and I shall be meditating and playing inordinate amounts of Xbox. That's the week. Meditation and Xbox. That's the plan. 03-44-499-1000 is the telephone number. You can watch me on Periscope as well. Good evening, one and all. You can call in about anything. And I think some of you may have been confused recently by the fact that I haven't done topics for ages. Then the last 2 weeks, we've thrown loads of topics in. The way this show works, it's unlike any other phone-in show on British radio. I would suggest on radio around the world. I will sit here and I will talk about stuff, and I'm going to go through the papers and I'll talk about my day, and I will say, just aren't the police wonderful? Aren't those guys wonderful? So I'll talk a bit about my day and stuff that's been going on. And you're welcome to call in about the stuff that I talk about, or you can call in about absolutely anything you want. Maybe you've had a brilliant day, maybe you've had a lousy day, I don't know. But you can call in about anything. I did have a ban on Brexit and Trump. I think the ban on Trump is kind of lifted, if you want to call in about that. I think the ban on Brexit is still in place, because I just can't think that there will be anything new or original to say about Brexit. You know, leading Brexit chat, which the other radio station, which has closed down. Hey, one of the presenters at LBC has been given the thumbs up by a former head of the KKK. Isn't that amazing? And it's not Ferrari. One of the presenters on LBC has got the backing of the former head of the Ku Klux Klan. No wonder that station's going bust. Seriously, you tune to 97.3, it's just static or racist bilge. I can't imagine there being anything new to say about Brexit. So I'm going to keep the ban on Brexit in place, unless... Caddick's calling in, by the way, guys. Unless you think you have something new and unique to say about it. I bet you won't. I bet you won't at all. The papers as well today are full of the Oscars.
The Oscars.
And that old man muffing it up and that old lady muffing it up. I mean, there's nothing really to say about that, is there? An old man... An old man realised there was a mistake and then just gave it to an old lady to muff up. That's what happened. Old man went, nah, this is wrong. I'm not doing this. Here you go, love. And the old lady went, oh, brilliant. And what is there to add about that? Award ceremonies. I've been to a few award ceremonies. I've won a few awards. They're really boring. Really, really boring. To the point where I don't even want to go to the first Sony I won out of two. It was a silver. But I was so pleased that my honeymoon was booked. My honeymoon was booked, right? And I was nominated for whatever it was, best stupid show on the radio. I don't know. And I had my honeymoon booked. And my boss said, well, can you move the honeymoon? I went, no. They went, well, we'd really like you there. I went, yeah, I've just spent a fortune on a honeymoon. I'm not moving it because I don't care about those things. And I went and I went home, and it turns out we only won silver. So that doesn't count for anything anyway. Silver is not a win. But award ceremonies, and not just in radio, TV, you get award ceremonies for everything. I know, because I've hosted some of them, like Salesman of the Year. I used to do video game awards for, like, games retailers. I fell out with the bloke that ran HMV. I said something, and he took great offence at it, and then he slagged me off on stage as he collected his award, forgetting that when he left the stage, I still had a microphone. So I called him out. Fast forward 12 months to the next award, he wins another award, and he's still holding a grudge, and he says something rude about me again. Anyway, so the reward ceremony is for everything, 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 everything. If you've ever been, 03444991000, by the way, if you've ever been, boy, aren't they dull. And geez, isn't the food disappointing? The food at the Sony Awards should be the pinnacle of radio awarding. The food was lousy. Oh, it's awful, dull. You're doing table maths to work out, well, hang on, we're sat right at the back. That's unlikely we've won anything. That was the chair. They are tedious. And if you don't win, you've got to sit there for the rest of the evening. Yeah, that's great. And I don't drink, so well, if I drank it, it would be a whole lot worse. Horrible, horrible, horrible. So we can talk about awards. We can talk about what's in the paper. We can talk about what the hell is going on in your head tonight. 03444991000. Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Nights, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
03444991000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Louis Bath!
Hello, I've got something original to say about Brexit.
Oh, sweet Lord, you've risen to that challenge, you muppet. I bet you haven't.
Look, it might come as a surprise to you to learn that I voted Leave.
Is that the original point? Because I haven't heard that in the debate so far.
That's the jump off point.
Okay.
And I'm going to say why I voted Leave.
But is it going to be interesting to anybody?
It's going to be interesting.
I don't believe you, man.
It's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a journey through the heart of everything, Leave.
I don't want to go through anything's heart, Bath.
Look.
Yes.
When I was 14.
Yeah.
I went on a exchange trip to Germany.
You were touched up by the EU?
No!
Okay!
No. I met this girl.
Yes?
We snogged. German girl. Lovely girl.
You snogged German style?
The gear, the stuff, you know. Lovely, lovely girl.
Have you been drinking?
No.
Okay.
No.
Huh?
I just... don't drink!
No!
I don't drink,
no.
Ian.
No!
No.
No!
Look, and I'm prepared to self-publish a book.
Yes.
About how I don't drink and how I'm perfectly normal.
Okay.
I'm prepared to do that.
Yes.
And also go for a drink in Eastbourne.
You're protesting quite a lot.
Yeah. Methinks. Yeah.
Doth.
Methinks.
So you snogged a German girl, and that's why you voted Brexit?
Yeah, because she never called. 30 years on, it's like I don't exist.
Right. What we're doing, Bath, is I've got to finish this show at 1. I can't leave early, okay?
Okay.
I would never do that. But what I'm going to do is once I finish, I'm going to jump in my Volkswagen Polo. I'm going to drive down to Strood in Gloucestershire, where I believe you're located.
Deadly.
You can jump in the back, have a little kip. We'll drive all around the country righting wrongs, and then we're going to drive to Germany.
Yes!
And we're going to find her!
We're going to go to Göttingen.
What? Is that her name?
Göttingen. No, her name was Vivian.
That's not a German name. She wasn't German.
Vivian? Yes, she was.
I don't think Vivian...
She had an umlaut in her surname, and that's as far as I'm prepared to...
Vivian umlaut. You've given us enough...
Have you got the Simon Bates Our Tune music?
You've given us enough information. Vivian with an umlaut? Well, we pretty much know who she was.
Yeah.
We know exactly who she was.
Yeah.
For goodness sakes, you've blown it there.
I'm sorry for her, but... He's got it!
The answer to your question is, of course I've got it! Of course I've got it! What do you think I am? I work in commercial radio!
Let's call her Valerie.
With an umlaut. Have you heard Alex Lowe's delicious takes on Simon Bates' Our Tune? He does.
Oh God! Alex Lowe's one man show.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the
Time of Our Lives
show based on. on the Simon Garfield book at the German Street Theatre about 15 years ago.
Hang on a second. This might be rude, so let's see where this goes. Hang on. Hang on. I think this is one. Here we go. This is Alex Lowe as Simon Bates. Let's have a listen.
Dave is a long-distance lorry driver. In his letter, he points out that there's so much more to lorry drivers than simply greasy food, murder, and dogging in lay-bys with the likes of... Sometimes the route is a solitary one, and every twist and turn of the road, a pull on the high cholesterol of a lorry driver's furred-up heartstrings.
Furred-up heartstrings!
Shelly!
Driving all night through the country with just 20 B&H and this month's Razzle for company, Dave's mind switched to his school days.
And it goes on. And they've just... Oh, yeah, that's fun, isn't it?
No, one of the best nights of my life.
What? Tonight?
One of the best nights of my life was...
reminiscing.
Alex Lowe. It was his one-man show.
Yes.
And the first half was...
Yes.
The Radio 1 Nation's favourite thing. The second half was his one-man show based on the wrestling. Both based on Simon Garfield book.
Yes.
Oh, it was
it's good.
A stunning thing. You know, his Adrian Street was amazing. You know? And, you know, we are children of the 70s. We grew up.
Yeah.
Saturday afternoons, World of Sport, all that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. It's a shame what happened to Alex Lowe, isn't it?
Where is he?
Well, exactly. That's the shame. Louis, I'll be there. I'll probably, this time of night, I'll be there about 1:45.
Okay.
Bring some sandwiches. See you later on. Thank you. Dave, regular email to the show. Come on, libtard. Come on, libtard Lee. Give me just one example of racism. You can't, can you? You make things up because of your piss-poor ratings and these drugs you are taking for your mental illness distorts your thoughts. I can give you an example. One example of racism on LBC. It's between 7 and 8pm, weeknights. It's called Nigel Farage. And guess what, Dave? You're blocked from sending me emails on that email address, so you can spend the rest of the evening making up other email addresses. A bit like a sad case. Evening, Paul.
Hip, hip, hip.
Hip, 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 Paul. What kind of cake?
Lemon drizzle, obviously.
Yeah, we go. Hang on a second. He said lemon drizzle, Cads.
Hip, hip, hip.
There we go. yes, Paul.
How are you? And how are you?
I'm all right, thank you very much indeed. I'm all right, thank you.
I don't phone in very often, but I do listen a lot, and I do tweet a lot.
Yes.
I do try and get involved as much as I can.
Yes.
Not always very well received, I'm sure, but that's life.
Yes.
Can I offer you an apology, first of all?
Okay.
The last rabbit hole.
Yes.
I bought tickets.
Yes.
Didn't make it.
Oh.
I'm very sorry.
What? Well, hang on a second. I thought we'd account. We took the register, and I thought everybody was. Oh, no, you're right, Paul wasn't on the register. What the hell? Where were you, man? We waited an hour for you.
Okay, well, I'll take responsibility for it. But to be fair, it was very good, so since you managed without me.
Absolutely right. We struggled along without you.
You did. You did maybe go a little bit too long on the edit with the final few admissions at the end.
Well, these things, you know, it's these things are out there, guys. These things are, people need to be warned about the dangers of Andrew's liver salts. People need to know about them.
I'm not going near them now, that's a fact.
Well, if you use them, like all drugs, if you use them responsibly, a good time is guaranteed for all. Too much of a bad thing, though, too much of a good thing makes a bad thing. Too many mix make a muckle, or something like that.
Okay. so, next question. My son, on you're quite open with your children, I'm quite open with my children, so I talked about the rabbit hole, why I couldn't go, why I was sad about that.
Yes.
And he said, well, next time, Dad, if you've got two tickets, I'll come with you.
Oh. How old is your son?
14.
Well,
I think if you guarantee no wangers.
Can't guarantee that. I would respectfully suggest. A, I don't know if the venue has an age limit, so we'd have to check with the venue. Because it's
that's fair call. Yeah,
it's a bar. It might be 18. I don't know.
Okay.
But also, I would respectfully suggest that anyone under the age of 16 should neither attend the records nor should they download the podcast. Children under the age of 16, do not download Down the Rabbit Hole. It's full of swears. It's not for the kids. So I hope that's cleared that up.
That has, absolutely. But if I turned up with him, you know, it'd be great.
What? Well, he wouldn't get in. He'd have to wait in the car outside, so, it wouldn't be particularly great for him.
Oh, wouldn't it? Okay. Huh? Fair enough.
You could take him a packet of crisps and a Coke. That was the entertainment in the 70s. When Mum and Dad went to the boozer, we'd sit in the car and a packet of crisps and a Coke would come out every 45 minutes if they remembered us.
Yeah, absolutely. How lucky were we?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Anything else, Paul?
I wrote some notes, but I've bloody forgotten them now.
Well,
so
you've forgotten the notes?
Yeah, no, I'll drop the notes.
Okay.
And otherwise, and just the usual thing I usually follow up with is the show.
Yes.
I think, mate, every night you question it. I listen to it most nights.
Not every night.
And
some nights, but not every night.
I didn't say every night. I said most nights.
You said every night.
No, I didn't.
You did say every night. You literally said every night.
No, I didn't.
Get the clip, please. Get the clip, please, Ed, of Paul saying...
please.
Every night.
Get the clip, Ed.
Are you drinking?
Yeah, I have a few beers every night.
Yeah, okay. You have a few beers every night.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would trust my judgment on this one a little bit better. Let's wait and see. Let's just wait.
Okay.
You said a question every night. Ed, can you play the clip from your end, please, Ed? When you've got it, just wait. He's doing some computer magic.
Every night you question it. I listen to it most nights.
Not every night. There we go. That was you.
I listen to it most nights. Every night I question it, I listen to it most nights.
No, no, no. You said...
Hang on, in a second. Every night I question it.
No, Paul, you said...
I listen most nights.
Paul, you're actually embarrassing yourself now. You said to me, and I'm quoting you, you said, every night you question it, I listen most nights.
Oh, I did say that, actually. That's fair. Okay, so...
Someone the other day said to me, someone who, I think it was Simon, actually. Well, anyway, someone at the Rabbit Holes, Performance Ring said, Ian, I don't call the show, I'd like to, but I think I should I should have a few beers. And I said, no. Have you heard the people who've had a few beers that phone up? They generally embarrass themselves.
Yeah. That's why I don't ring in so often, because there's only so much embarrassment I can take.
You can phone in sober. There's that. Go on, what you got? We've got a minute left.
I could do. Okay, seriously, the way the show's going, last night I listened, it was really uncomfortable listening.
Yeah, it's good.
Didn't mean it wasn't entertaining, exactly right.
Yeah, it's gold.
The way you're taking the show, mate, every night it goes in a different direction.
Yes.
No one else is doing that.
No.
You are.
Thank you.
God bless you. Good night.
Good night. Yes, Canuck?
Hip, hip, hip.
What kind of cake?
Lemon noodle.
Beautiful.
What the pancake filling?
Oh. Well, it would have to be the classic Nutella, banana, and golden syrup.
Mmm. You can't be the classic.
Go on.
With me, it's Nutella and peanut butter.
I'll be honest, though. Pancakes are rank, aren't they? Rank cakes. Careful how you say that.
Homemade ones are good.
No, well, do you mean homemade ones? Where else can you get pancakes? You're talking about having a crepe in the street, aren't you?
No. You make the pancake batter.
Yes.
And you whisk it up.
Yes.
Bit of hot oil on a frying pan.
Yeah, I know how to make pancakes!
Do you know with the boys?
No, because I don't like pancakes. They went to a friend's and had pancakes, I think.
All right.
Well, great call, Alan. I'm glad we got that sorted. 034, Cleo, you'll be up after the news. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. Is there any food more disappointing than the pancake? So you only have it one day a year, unless you're having a crepe in the street. So much anticipation, so much effort, so much squeezy Jif lemons for so little taste reward. Cleo, you'll be up after the news, and it could be you, dear listener. 0344 499 1000, late nights of the Inley. On Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.
Another hour to go. Why don't you join us on periscope.tv/Ian Lee? It's the place to be. Late nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
So people are looking at the floor instead of my beautiful goatee. There we go. There we go, guys. You can watch the show, dear listener, as well as listen. Imagine a radio show with pictures. Periscope.tv/Ian Lee. You can listen on DAB or download the smartphone app. If you don't like it, don't listen. It's as simple as that. Howard Stern has this great line. I don't really like Howard Stern. I think he's quite overrated. I think he's you know, I mean, yes, he may have been the first person to have two lesbians having sex on the air, but I just feel it's a little bit 90s. But he says the people that like him listen to him for an hour. The people that don't like him listen to him for 2 hours. Imagine. There are radio hosts I don't like, and I don't listen to them. It's that simple. I don't listen to them. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. You can give me a call on about anything. Where have you been for the first hour? You've missed the delightful Sir Edward of Large talking about his life and his career and work and stuff like that. Pancakes we've discussed. Brexit has been discussed. Germany has been discussed. All kinds of things have been discussed. And that's what this show is. This show is all about, love, man. It's all about creating a nice, safe environment where people can come on and they can share what they want. Like, I've been thinking a lot today about that fella that called in last night believing he had a chip in his arm. Been thinking about him a lot, and he's convinced you. If you missed it, it was a really sad call. It's a fella in real turmoil, and he is convinced in his reality And as we know, the brain cannot distinguish between the real and the vividly imagined. So in his reality, he has at least one microchip under his skin, and he has cut into his arm, I believe, and pulled out wires, and he's bought a magnet, and he can feel it. And, you know, that's his reality. I interpret it that, A, to him it's real, you know, so it's happening, so it's real to him. But I would imagine that instead of it actually being a microchip, it might possibly be cocaine psychosis, or it might be a very serious mental health issue. And I don't know what that is, because I'm not a doctor or a psychiatrist or anything like that. But when you start cutting your skin, that's bad news, man. That's bad news. Whether it's to self-harm, or, you know, because you want the pain, or because you want to damage something that is perfect, you know, by leaving marks on it, or whether it's to try and get something out that you believe is under your skin. That's bad news. That's really bad news. And I've just been thinking about him a lot today, and there's nothing I can do. It's not, you know, this show is a drop-in centre for the lost, the lonely and the bewildered. And, all I can do is share my experience, strength and hope. That's it. That's all I can do. I can give phone numbers as well, you know, but do people ever phone these numbers when you give them? I don't think so. Very unlikely, but I can give phone numbers. But all I can practically do is listen. And if they want me to, I can share my experience, strength and hope. And that's it. And that's it. And that fella really, really got to me. Really got to me. Because he is in, he's in turmoil. And I found it really upsetting I found it upsetting that he's struggling and having a lousy time, and he felt that he could turn to me. And actually, in the great scheme of things, I couldn't offer him any advice. You know, I couldn't offer him any advice. What could I say? But I also felt proud that between us, Catherine, Ed and myself, we have created a show where gentlemen like that feel that they can phone up and share that their life is in so much turmoil, they are cutting their own flesh, and they can feel comfortable phoning up and sharing that stuff. And that is pretty much unique. Pretty much unique. James O'Brien, I think, occasionally nods in that direction of mental health, you know, in a, talking about it in a more casual way. But I'd be hard-pushed to think of any other examples. And coming from a background that I do, you know, where the 11 o'clock show was a TV show I did years ago, and it was mean. It was mean. It's funny. There's some really funny stuff in it, but there was also some very unfunny stuff in it, and there was some stuff in it that was actually quite mean and quite nasty. And, you know, my background for a long time has been mean. It's been mean comedy. And, you know, the last few years doing the show here and doing the show at the BBC and Absolute to a certain extent, LBC a little bit, I suppose, and creating something where, you know what? It's hard work, isn't it, this? It's hard work. Jim and Cleo, I can see there. I'll come to you in a minute. 03444991000. It's hard work being alive, isn't it? It's hard work every morning, opening your eyes and thinking, do I have to do this all over again? Didn't I do it right the first time? And you have to keep doing it. And you have to. And for some people, it's easier than it is for others. But being a human being and existing with all these other human beings kind of buzzing around us, you know, all the time, enough hard work, isn't it? It really takes a toll. And today I've been missing my dad quite a bit. And I've not been to see my mum for a while. I need to put that right. And I miss my sister, who emigrated. And I've been so busy, I've not seen as much of my boys as I would like to. And I've missed them, and I've phoned them up today, and they made me laugh a lot. But this thing, this being human, this living, this existing. It's enough hard work, isn't it? Enough hard work. And I'm sort of doing all right at the moment. I had a nice session with my therapist. The pills I'm on now, I guess I've been on them for about 4 or 5 weeks, and they've settled down quite nicely. I still fluctuate between feeling, you know, kind of up there and then sort of down there a bit, and getting that middle is getting closer to the middle. The ups and the lows are not quite as far apart as they were. But it's hard work, isn't it? Being alive and doing this and paying bills and talking to people that you may not want to talk to, you know, and having to make phone calls and getting emails and buying bread in the shop. You know, sometimes that's hard work. And some people find that impossible to do. And you hear a call like that fella last night, that poor soul last night, who is living in a different reality to us. You know, he's living in a different reality to us. And it just makes you think, doesn't it? Really? What am I talking about? I don't know. A load of old guff. It's 12 minutes past 11 on a Tuesday night, and my brain is slowly starting to batten down the hatches, and I've got callers waiting. Cleo, Dean, Jim, I'll come to you in a minute. 0344 499 1000. We call you back, guys. Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Unmissable late night radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Evening, Dean.
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Dean.
How are you?
Yeah?
All right, I'll send a lovely message and positive thoughts to all the people.
All the people,
feeling
huh?
So good at the moment.
Okay. Yep.
Anyway,
yes.
Subject.
Subject.
I was reading in the paper, I've nicked this one. What? I was reading in the paper
yes.
about people's names sounding or being no. like what they look like.
Yes.
So.
Rose, you would be, there would be an attractive woman. Can you think of an ugly Rose?
No.
Nope.
No. I was thinking of Rose as maybe.
Oh, Rose West, yes. Well remembered,
no,
Catherine, yes.
No.
So we've just shot that theory down.
Someone's sort of shy.
Yeah.
Maybe a rose, someone with rosy cheeks.
Right. This is in the newspapers, but we've already proved by saying Rose West that it's nonsense.
We haven't got there yet.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Are you drunk as well? Is everyone drunk tonight? Was it Cheap Beer Tuesday?
I'm all right. I'm not too bad.
Just got a nice little buzz going and slurring, yeah?
I can talk. I'm reasonable.
Well, you think you can.
Right, so, when you think of the name Tim, how do you picture it?
Tall, thin, with buck teeth.
Oh, you've read the paper as well?
Yeah, but I didn't read that bit, I just read the headline.
Okay, what about Bob?
Short, squat.
Balding.
Yes, Claire Balding.
Hmm. Claire for Claire Balding is not right.
No, because she's got hair.
Is it?
She's got hair.
Yes, I like to think of Claire as a slimmer lady than the Claire Balding.
So basically, there is a story in the papers that I didn't even write it down on my list of things because I thought it was so tedious. Where is it? Hang on a second. Hang on. Let's find it, because I saw this. But we're proving it wrong with every single name.
Okay, maybe it doesn't work unless you know the personalities a bit. There's a bit more to it.
Hang on, we're going to find it. Here we go. Does being called Rose make you look better? Could you tell whether a man is called Bob or Tim based solely on his looks?
That's it.
Sounds impossible, but the name our parents give us has a lasting effect on how we present ourselves, research suggests.
Mm-hmm.
A woman called Rose might subconsciously become more feminine to match her floral name. Or an Elizabeth, named after the Queen, may appear more regal and serious. I mean...
Well, take your name, for example, Ian.
Yes!
You've got the I-A-I-N, haven't you?
Yes.
So that could be looked at as a bit well to
Yes.
Yes.
Why have I got someone ever got... So look, someone's said, Ian, I don't agree it's hard being alive. Maybe you've never been seriously ill enough that being alive is a precious gift. It's Ian Taylor. Ian, I'm sorry that you have obviously been seriously ill enough, but you can't, you know, and that's your truth, and my truth is something different. So, you know, peace, man.
We've all been ill, haven't we?
Well, not...
It takes a bit of time to get over it.
We've not all been seriously ill. I'm sure that gentleman has been seriously ill, and he treats life as a precious gift. But you can... But... Okay.
I think when
okay.
you're seriously ill, you shouldn't be phoning in to...
No, hang on. Seriously ill people can... He's not phoning... B, seriously ill people are allowed to phone in, and C, I don't want to make this an attack on him, because I'm sure he's an absolutely decent bloke, but I'm just disagreeing with his tweet.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay.
We done?
Dummy point?
Yeah, well, as best as you can, I think, Dean, under the circumstances.
Okay.
Ta-ta. Cleo!
Sleep-up-de-bop.
Thank you very much indeed. What you got for us?
You know what? I'm actually. I like waiting.
Oh, in that case, Jim. Jim. Jim.
Hello.
Jim. 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 It's you.
Yes, can you hear me?
Well, yes, I can. What's going on? Are you all right?
Sorry, I was just waiting on Matt Capitino at the time, and he's ready to
talk. There's in that sod's law that's I don't maybe not be sod's law, but isn't that the luck of it? You hang on for about 10 minutes, and you think, oh, I can risk going and making a nice cuppa, and that's when I come to you, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Can you hear me? Okay,
I can hear you perfectly, Jim. How are you doing? You're right.
Yeah, not too bad. It's just I've got the speaker on the phone here. I just didn't think it was getting through properly.
No, it's all good. For those who don't know, this, of course, is the legend that is Jim the Dancer. And if you came to Performance Ring on Sunday, you would have seen this man not only perform, but battle through technical difficulties to give what can only be described as a completely unique performance. And it was loved by everybody there, Jim.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks.
Thank you for coming down and doing it. It was absolutely brilliant. It was so nice to see you again, and so nice to see your wonderful. Now, I didn't get the full effect of the cat costume, because we were at the side, right? But someone posted a few pictures taken from sort of the back of the room. Flipping heck, it didn't half look good.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
It looks absolutely brilliant. In that room, because that room's quite black, and they turned the lights down when you came on. It looked quite spooky, Jim.
Yeah, it's good effect costume, yeah.
Yeah, I'd suggest you need a slightly longer lead coming out the back to plug it in, but apart from that, I thought it was absolutely brilliant, mate. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. I was sort of relaxed there, you know, when I was on the talent show the other week.
Yeah.
It was all quick, and I couldn't really get into it.
Yeah.
Your show was nice and relaxing, you know.
Oh, me and Kath tried with the Performance Ring. We're trying to create a nice, relaxed vibe, and everybody is there because they want the act to succeed. No one is thinking, oh, I hope they do badly, you know, or sniggering this. You know, we had a few technical problems, and everyone was very, very patient, and they waited while we ran around and we fixed things. And
yeah.
It's a unique night, and we're going to leave it for a little while, and maybe sort of towards the end of the summer we might do another one, which I would absolutely love you to come and perform at if we do one towards the end of the summer.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah,
nice
one. Good. Yeah,
brilliant. Do you get home all right?
Yeah, I got home all right. I got soaking wet on the way home.
Yeah, it was the weather was pretty lousy, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I cycled all the way back. I got back pretty quick, about an hour it took, but got soaking wet.
You cycled? But you had that massive box. Did you have that strapped to the back?
Yeah, that's it, yeah, on the back of the bike, yeah.
Oh, dearie me. Well done, Jim. The effort the effort was appreciated, so thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad you all enjoyed it anyway.
Mate, you heard... you heard the and let me just say, Ian Taylor. I know it wasn't a dig. It's hard on Twitter, isn't it, Ian? Peace and love, you know. Peace, and I hope my reply didn't seem like a dig. It's so. Do you use Twitter, Jim?
No, I can't use it. No, the bloke used to do me work in a computer shop, but I can only basically work Facebook and YouTube by.
Oh, Twitter's a nightmare because you can't. You everything comes across as being sarcastic or mean on Twitter, and the number of times I've replied to people. Yes. And it's just got uncomfortable, and people, everyone thinks everyone else is having a pop, and it's just, it's
a nightmare,
and I'm really looking forward. Next week, right, next week I'm off, right, I'm not going anywhere, I've just booked a week off, and I'm going to meditate, and I'm going to play Xbox, and I'm going to, hey, flippin' heck, I can just see who's calling in. Oh, blimey, a musical legend is calling in. Is that the real one? Oh, fantastic. And I'm going to turn off my phone, Jim, and I'm just going to chill out, man. Going to chill
out. Yeah, why not?
That's the plan.
I don't blame you.
That's the plan.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. Have a nice rest.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. Anything else, Jim?
Not really. That's about it for now. Anybody, one person put a video on the YouTube for me from that show. Anybody else?
I would have to have. I'll have to have a little look. There are one or two videos around. Yes, so I'll have to. I'll have to have a little look, and see what we can. I'll see if I can forward them over to your thing. So I'm doing two things at once. That's why I'm sounding vaguely distracted. Jim, listen, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
We will speak and, again soon.
Yeah, and look.
Oh, go on. Go on.
Look forward to seeing everybody in the future coming months.
Nice one, Jim. Thank you, mate. You're a top bloke. Here we go. Just indulge me for 30 seconds. Listen to this. Hey!
It's nice to be nice, as my mother would say. It's good to be good, and it's fun to be fun.
Listen to this.
It's good to be good, and it's fun to be fun. It's nice to be nice.
Honestly, I love that song, and I'm absolutely... Hang on a second, it's the man behind that song, it's Thomas Walsh. Evening, Thomas!
Hanging on the man in front, behind, and all around them songs.
Oh, mate, listen, I'm so... Thomas Walsh of Pugwash. If you don't know Pugwash, do yourself a favour. While you're listening to this, go onto iTunes or wherever it is you get your music from. Go and download some Pugwash tracks. You will not be disappointed. You've been on my mind for a couple of reasons, Mr. Walsh. Firstly, because I've got to do... I'm going to do a pledge for your new album, which we'll get to in a second. Secondly, I saw Neil Hannon, the Divine Comedy, on Saturday up in Manchester.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely brilliant. And of course, you've worked with him loads as well. So you were floating around in the back of my head.
Well, thanks, Ian. Well, first of all, I'm probably known a lot more in England because of Duckworth Lewis method.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I was ringing you up about, because you're talking about award ceremonies, and I do have a brilliant Ivor Novello award story.
Hang on a minute. That's a proper songwriting award. You do proper songwriting.
Well, I've got to admit, that it is my proudest musical moment by far, because, and I'll throw this in, because, you know, I'll throw in a few names in, I might as well throw them in, get a few more listeners in.
Yes.
When I was in Jeff Lynne's house in LA...
I wondered, it stopped the clock, that only took 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
That's the record. It's normally 2 seconds.
I know. But, yes.
He had three Ivor Novello standing in his kitchen, in this little alcove in his kitchen.
Yeah.
And I went, well, can I touch one? Because I got so close to winning one. And he goes, oh, did you not win one then? You know, as if it was like, you know, having a shit or something. You know. Oh, did you not win one? You know, like that little bare brummy accent that I went, no, Jeff, I didn't win one. And he goes, well, that one's for Album of the Year, Out of Blue, 1978, he won. Then he won for Best Song, Xanadu, in 1980.
Wow. Wow.
And then he got a Lifetime Achievement one around 2004, I think. So I got pictures with him, and there I am holding the guy from the film.
Because you've met some of my heroes. Jeff Lynne, of course, being a super... How do you know Jeff Lynne?
Well, honestly, through my persistent, you know, love of his music and the fact that, you know, through all the dark years, but yet I'd still be sitting in interviews, you know, that were going into some of the biggest tones in the world, because when I was doing Duckworth Lewis as well,
yeah,
you know, we got into a lot of stuff, you know, me and Neil, a lot of great, you know, publications and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was always Jeff this, Jeff that, because he's such an influence on me. So just through friends in America who actually got to know, really it was a friend called Ken Simpson who played with Neil Innes.
Right, okay, yeah. We love Neil on this show, of course.
Amazing, you know, and he went to the Seventh Point, which is a movie that hasn't come out yet, which was the documentary made about Neil.
Yeah.
And, you know, being the Seventh Point. And he went to the screening in L.A., you know, and everyone was there, including Jeff. And Ken actually sat behind Jeff for the whole evening.
Oh,
and, you know, and then, of course, Ken used to carry around my albums, and he had Jollity on him, which it's nice to be nice to take him from. And, he just had to Jeff at the end. He goes, "Oh, you might like this band, you know." And here you go. And Jeff goes, "Oh, I've heard a bit about these. I've seen them on YouTube."
Isn't that a thrill when they've heard about you spontaneously? That's incredible.
Oh, and the even better one was Ken says about an hour later when they were leaving, because Jeff was leaving to the foyer, and he's seen Ken, and he looked through the crowd and he waved the CD and he went, "I've still got it, you know." Like, he hadn't been to into the nearest game, which you do with most things, of course. Which we all do sometimes.
My favourite one of those of yours is, didn't Brian Wilson, once he was reminded who you were, went, "Oh, you're the nice to be nice guy."
It is a classic. I mean, it's a classic for me because, A, I was drinking a lot of the time, and I came home one night after a fantastically wonderful session out.
Yeah.
I had an email from David Leaf.
He's a famous Beach Boys historian. For those who don't know, he's documents all their stuff, and he's a legend.
Yeah, absolutely amazing man, a great friend, and a Beach Boy, Bee Gees historian as well.
Yeah,
and all these kind of great acts. And he was managing Brian at the time, and he sent a message through MySpace.
Wow, MySpace! I do remember that. That was around the same time as Friends Reunited.
Yes, all them hideous things. MySpace just seems like, you know, a pair of old trousers that just don't fit anymore. when you think about it, you know, it's so clunky, I suppose, everything is so modern. Anyway, I digress. I had an email, and it said, "Oh, by the way, David Leaf here." And I went, "Okay." And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, I was pissed. And he says, "Oh, by the way, Brian wants to meet you. He loves his place to be nice." And I just, wow. I did go to the toilet on the chair.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I bet. You know. No, I bet you would. I think I've told you this story before, Thomas. Around the time of Hurricane Katrina, Brian Wilson had on his website, "If you donate $100, I'll try and phone you up." And I was like, "Well, it's a great cause, and it's 70 quid. I'll do it." And I put my numbers on and where I'd be. And one evening, my girlfriend came in and said, "There's a guy on the phone pretending to be Brian Wilson." I went, "No." And it was Brian. And we chatted for 10 minutes and I giggled like an idiot and I thanked him. And afterwards I put the phone down and I burst into tears. You know, I was in shock.
Aww.
Because we know this, you know, Brian should be dead. You know, and anyone who went to see the Beach Boys in the 80s and the 90s, he was nowhere to be seen. So to A, have him phone me up, B, you know who you are and respect your songs. I can't think of anything much better than that for a songwriter.
Well, it was special, and I always think, you know, Brian should have been dead before I was born.
Yeah,
That's how weird it is.
Yeah.
And I'm completely bollocks now, if you know what I mean. Well, I'm sorry.
Watch your language. We're not on Irish radio where anything goes.
I'm sorry.
That's a yellow card.
I just remembered I wasn't talking to you like normal.
I know.
But, it was, and then when I went into meeting, he just looked at me, and the light wasn't on.
Yeah.
That's the thing with Brian, especially, and this is 2004,
yeah.
Maybe, Brian.
Two yellow cards, Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know on Irish radio you can say anything you want.
I'm sorry.
Come on now, because this is a good story. Don't ruin it with profanity.
My apologies to Catherine as well.
she's wagging her finger.
I'm sorry. So he just looked at me, and then Jeffrey Foskett went, "Brian, this is Thomas. He wrote that song," and before he could say anything else, Brian goes, "Hey, you're the nice guy."
That's a brilliant Brian Wilson impression.
I just said, "Yeah, I am, Brian, and you're the soul-destroying, amazing, genius guy."
Yeah, yeah,
And he smiled, and it was like, I swear, you know, like music, and, you know, the light goes on.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It was that kind of moment. What an amazingly spiritual man he is. I've never had it with anybody else.
I've interviewed him a couple of times. The second time, he wasn't there, you know, and it was... Jeffrey Foskett was in the room, and I was having a big geek off with Jeffrey. But the first time, we were sat there talking, and it was... And I was so nervous. And it was at the end of the day, and he was really tired, but he was there. And he said, "What's your favourite Beach Boys song?" And I said, "Oh, my favourite song's Marcella." And he kind of sat back and went... "Really? You like Marcella?" I said, "Yeah, I love it." I said, "It's really funky. I think it's, you know, it's a lost classic." And then he started singing it to me. And, you know, he's on the other side of a coffee table. I'm sat there and my hero is singing one of my favourite songs of all time. And I just thinking, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, shoot me now. This is it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I'm a musician. That's what I am by default, and that's what I do. And some people would say, you know, that's allegedly, and fair enough, they'd probably be right. But the thing about it is that, you know, if you walk on the buses all your life, you know, you hop on the bus, you don't pay a fare, you know, and you can meet the head of the bus, you know, walking club every week and have a pint. Yeah. And that's what you do, because we're all just normal working class people, you know. That's what we've always done, but it just so happens that because I personally have been in, and you know, you through your TV work and everything over the years, your comic work, you know, you do get to meet these people if you're lucky. And so I know a lot of people go, "Oh, here we go again, they're talking about this." But I mean, if you do spend 4 hours in a pub with Ray Davies and sing all of the songs to him and he's harmonising, that's something you don't forget.
Oh, it's magical. You know, and I know the fact that you have worked with some of my favourite songwriters. You've worked with Neil Hannon, and I just think that, you know, the Divine Comedy, I do not understand why they are not celebrated as one of the world's greatest bands. You know, I do, it's because they're too intelligent. But, you know, playing this wonderful venue in Manchester, the Albert Hall, which is a stunning venue. But I'm thinking... Neil should be playing, you know, he should be playing something five times the size of this.
Well, let's be honest, he did 3 nights at the Palladium, Brian.
Yeah, that's true.
The thing is, he didn't go to... He went to America with Ben Folds in the early years, but he didn't stick it out, he didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of that is kind of, you know, I only go to America because that's where I can earn a living.
And his new album's a delight. Also, you know, Andy Partridge, who is Britain's greatest songwriter, you know, above Lennon McCartney, above Ray Davies, is Partridge all the way for me.
Well, you know, a lot of people would agree with you. I mean, to be honest with you, he sits up there at the throne, I think, you know. Well, of course he does. I love him so much. And he only tweeted today about the new album from himself, which really helped, got more sales and, you know, more pledges. And Andy, to me, you know... It's not sad about Andy because of the amount of work he's done, but, you know, he could almost... I mean, if he did a pledge tomorrow or a Kickstarter, you know, he could go and record in L.A. for 2 years, he'd raise £1 million, so I just think, you know, it'd be nice if Andy brought us some new music, because this stuff is just mind-blowing.
They're making a documentary about XTC.
Yeah.
And I wonder, sometimes these documentaries about groups, I'm not saying that XTC are going to get back together, but sometimes these documentaries, when the protagonists sit back and watch it, sometimes it sparks something. Do you know what I mean? A desire to try and do something again.
I agree. But I just think, you know, people constantly asking Andy about live work is almost insulting me, you know?
Yeah. That's not his thing, and that's never going to happen, and that's... Although I had a brilliant dream that XTC played the Royal Albert Hall with an orchestra. Man alive. But you get more gigs in the States, do you then, Tom?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my fan base is there. I mean, you know, you can't say that, because people start going, "I live in Skegness and I love you." So, you know, but it is true that 80% of the traffic, if you want to, you know, use a modern term, it comes from America. And they called me, so about 3 or 4 years ago, I gave in and I went because I desperately wanted to go anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, toured. It's just been absolutely incredible. I mean, you go to Truck Stop McGill's in the middle of Wisconsin and, you know, and 10 people come out and they've traveled 2,000 miles by car to see it. I mean, even though it's 50 people in total, it's an incredible thing.
Because
in America, they genuinely love music. And you know rock and roll is from there, because they genuinely, you know, you go to a gig, I've done gigs in London, and especially Dublin, because, you know, I'm not slagging London. But people are there going, "Is that really Order Fiver?" Did he not give me that for £3?
Well, the thing is, we all want that. We all, and I'm. You can hear me tapping away, and it's just because I'm going onto your Kickstarter because I've been meaning to pledge for ages, and now that you're here, I might as well do it. And I'm going to tweet the hell out of it in a minute because we need music. But nowadays, everyone wants music. Everyone wants entertainment for free, whether it's movies or music or podcast. But we want it for free because I can go and get any Hollywood movie. I can get it on my computer now. For nothing. Yeah. And any album, anywhere in the world, I can get it in 5 minutes on my computer. And people forget that, actually, it takes a lot of work. To make a record, it doesn't have to take a lot of work.
Oh, God. But I'll tell you one thing, we're very lucky that we were brought up in the Eddie Laird generation, as in, you know, we remember three channels on the TV. We remember how difficult it was to obtain.
Yeah.
You know, to see a movie and to go and buy a record. I mean, I used to cycle for an hour in the thickens of rain to go and, you know, get it, find an Idle Race single or something, you know, you know, to move or something, you know, and it meant so much more to me. That's why I still have them and I love them, because I have a story about every record I have and I'll tell them. And, you know, there is something cynical about a button being pressed. But even now, people are giving out about pressing a button.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, a little bit of, that's why it's great that vinyl is back. I mean, they are ripping people off, you know that.
They cost a fortune, those records. And also, a lot of the new records, not all of them, but a lot of the new records, they're pressed from the CDs, aren't they? So it's the same, you're not getting the richness that you would get from old vinyl. It's the same compressed sound.
Well, I'll give you, and a great example would be, say a Jethro Tull album, for example, right? Yeah. You know, it's brought out on 180-gram vinyl, and it's $44.95 or something, right? I mean, you can go on Discogs or anywhere else and get a mint original copy for £10.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's a bit of madness that's going on. I mean, I know they're making it a bit more widely available, but, you know, I think the price could even out a little bit. You know, the George Harrison box has just come out, Ian. I'm sure you've checked it out, have you?
It looks stunning, but I can't afford it.
It looks
beautiful. I can't justify that amount of money. You know, I bought that Monkees box set and they messed that up because one of the albums was pressed all crazy. And I bought that because I'm a completist and, you know, I kind of have to. But actually, that wasn't that expensive, I don't remember, was it?
Well, think of the King's Mono box recently.
Yeah.
It was incredibly cheap. I mean, that was less than €200.
Yeah.
You know, and what a beautiful box that is. You know, it's really simple but gorgeous. Andrew Sandoval, of course, who works a lot with the Monkees project.
Oh, he does magic, that man.
Yeah.
Now listen, Thomas, the new album, I am pledging €25 because I want a signed CD.
Please. That's not all.
Oh, flipping heck! What do you want from me, man?
I'm only kidding. Don't be silly. That's so kind of you.
Unbelievable. So why are you doing it this way?
Because I can only make the record that, I mean, let's face it, I mean, I'm going to need more, and that'll be my own money, obviously, but, you know, I'm going to LA to do it with Jason Faulkner, who's ex-Jellyfish, plays with Beck at the moment, is in Beck's touring band, and, of course, played on McCartney's Personal Creation in the Back Dead album, and has played with Air for years, amazing songwriter and instrumentalist. And he's doing a Roy Wood, he's basically playing everything apart from me doing what the big pieces I always do, and doing the vocals, and we're going to have an absolute ball, because I love the man, I know him 20 years, and he has some amazing stories about Ringo Starr as well, which, you know, if we had another 10 hours, I could tell you some brilliant stories.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, I just wanted to say, by the way, your show was brilliant, Periscope was great. I can tune in, I love it, Eddie Laird was fantastic.
Wasn't he delightful?
Oh, amazing. I mean, I just thought, you know what I thought when I was doing it? That gobshite John Bishop, right, having his own show on W or whatever channel it is.
Yeah.
And he's interviewing people who nobody cares about. You know, Ollie Moore, let's be honest about it. Like, why are you interviewing Ollie Moore for anything?
It's like when people like that, and they're 23 and they release their autobiography. It's like, well, hang a minute, what's it about? You went to school and that's it.
And it is, and it's Piers Light, you know, it's Piers Morgan Light, and Piers Morgan is the scum of the earth. So you have John Bishop doing this, and you have him interviewing Z-list celebrities, and then you could go to Eddie Laird's house, and I'd watch that all day on the TV, because the man has true talent, and he can entertain still.
Yeah.
And he has a story, and they were watched by 18, 20 million people, and then people become our generation now, and we remember them, and there's such a there's such an audience for that stuff. Why would you think like a goggle box thing would be great for little and large?
It's something, because, you know, if we learn anything from last year, it's these people ain't going to be around forever, you know. There's we're that age where people are going to go, listen, Thomas, I've got to go. Yes. I'm going to do, because I've missed two ad breaks because of you, so I'll get told off. No, don't. Listen, dear listener, if you're listening, Thomas Walsh, you'll know him from Duckworth Lewis, but also you should check out Pugwash. If you like kind of Beach Boys, this is a very quick, lazy summary, but if you like Beach Boys-y, ELO, tight harmonies, lush pop songs, Pugwash, and I'm going to tweet the link, but where can they find, how if they're not on Twitter, how can they find the Kickstarter?
At morbidlyobese.com.
Come on now.
No, it's just go on to Kickstarter and Google Pugwash, because obviously the link is very, you know,
I got it,
complicated with numbers and dashes and all. So if you just Google Kickstarter Pugwash, you'll be able to get there. And anyway, Facebook Pugwash pages, it's all over there as well.
Beautiful.
And Nick Haywood is answering. He's going to sing on a track, Nick, which is incredible.
Another cracking songwriter.
Mm, amazing. So Nick is going to sing on this particular track I put up last week as a little precursor.
Brilliant.
And he just loved it. And he got in touch and said, look, I'd love to sing on a track. He loved Mason on the Boundary.
Yeah.
And Out in the Middle by Duffer Bill's Method. So, you know, he loves his pop. I was watching him on Top of the Pops the other day. And he's singing Whistle Down the Wind. What a great song that was.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's a great little pop songwriter. He had a brilliant album, God, probably about 20 years ago now.
Yeah, I remember it.
Bacon and Eggs, I think, were on the front. I can't remember what it's called.
Exactly.
A cracking little pop album.
Yeah, really good. And I mean, a great writer. And a lovely guy as well. And he still looked 18.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll make you sick.
Well, I better let you go, Ian, because, you know, I'm blabbing.
Thomas, listen, any time you have an open invitation, I've been trying to get you on for ages. I keep texting, going, when you coming on? Oh, I'll come. When you coming on? And then you just phone up out of the blue.
No, because I always think you mean come into the studio. I never think it's ringing. Look, I can ring every night.
We've got telephones!
Okay.
When you're in London, you will have to come in. But we've got to listen. Best of luck, Thomas. I'm going to tweet the link now, and I'm gonna send you a few quid. And we'll speak soon, man. Take care.
Love you, mate.
Love you too, Thomas Walsh. Pugwash. Honestly, you've just found a little pop gem there, dear listener. That's my gift to you tonight. Go on YouTube. Go on iTunes. Go on Amazon. Treat yourself. Cleo. Paul, stay there. Come to you after this.
Unmissable late night radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late night Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Oh, man alive. Cleo and Paul, you've been waiting ages. Paul, I'll come to you in a second. Cleo's been waiting longer, but you did say you liked waiting.
Do you know why?
Yes.
It was really weird. I rang up about something I really, really tried.
Yes.
And I've only just remembered what it was.
Uh-oh.
Because when you're sitting waiting...
Yeah.
I know you've got The Rabbit Hole as a podcast. This is like a rabbit warren.
Hey.
You've had, like, loads of, like, strange little things. And so when you're sitting here, you know, like, in your head and you're waiting to come on...
Yes.
Every little thing just, like, popped me head off in a different direction.
Oh.
That last call, Thomas...
It's good, isn't it?
Absolutely mint.
Yeah.
Like, proper... Amazing.
I interviewed him once, absolute. I had him and Neil Hannon in the studio, and family men have just sat there.
Love Neil Hannon.
With guitars. And I said, right, you're going to do us a song. He said, what do you want to hear? Right, obviously meaning off of the new album. I went, do you know any Fleetwood Mac? And they both started going, dum 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 dum, loving you, didn't the right thing to do. They've just sat there, and I'm just thinking, flip. And you could throw anything at them, and they'd spend a minute going, right, I think we got it, right, and they just do it. What a thrill! What a thrill!
I had a bit of brawler for Neil Hannon in the 90s. Like, I loved him.
Oh, I love him. I love him. Yeah, his new album's a treat. We saw him on Saturday, and I was absolutely blown away. But he comes out dressed as Napoleon.
Shall I go back to the trite point I originally ran
up for? Yeah, go on, Cleo.
Might be worth thinking about.
Yes.
You mentioned how naff award ceremonies and stuff are.
Yes.
But I was like, yeah, you're right. And then I thought, hang on. There's been some mint sort of, like, events at, like, award ceremonies, like, things that have happened.
Go on.
And I was thinking, I was sitting there thinking, hang on. You've had Uncle Albert, or thingy, fall over.
What?
Which...
Did
you know, shouldn't really have been. You remember on, I think it was the Comedy Awards or something, and he, or the BAFTAs even?
Don't remember.
And he sort of fell over on the way to the stage.
Oh dear. So hang on a minute. An old man falling over is entertainment to you? You're sick.
Well,
you are dark.
I've actually got in and see, you've just done it again. You've sent me mind off to a different thing.
You're dark.
We used to have a fire drill.
Yeah.
I used to work in the middle of Newcastle. And we had a fire drill, which meant you had to walk like... We had to meet over the main road.
Yeah.
So you had to go via these little traffic lights. Yeah. We had this fire drill once. And we had, like, designated wardens from our office with jackets on, like, ushering people over the traffic lights when the fire drill was on. And one of the lasses called Rose. She was about 50-odd. And she tripped over and fell, like, proper, absolutely full-on flat on her face.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a... And like, I'm not usually like a slapstick humour type guy.
Yes. But so far, you've enjoyed an old man falling over.
The whole office was there.
And a woman falling over.
The whole office
this
is there.
Sick. You're sick, man.
I had to run and hide. I had to run and hide to laugh.
You people like you. You're like those you're like those film crews, right? Who find the slippiest when it's icy, they find the slippiest bit of the street and they set up a camera so they can spend 25 minutes filming people falling over. They don't say, "Hey, look out. There's a slippy bit of the street. You might or go and get some grit or something." They set up a camera and they keep quiet. That's you, Cleo.
It gets worse.
Go on.
Because maybe she was off for about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes.
And I was on the way to the toilet and she came out of the lift in a wheelchair.
Mate, you're laughing at a woman in a wheelchair. That is dark, Cleo. From a man who nearly died. Paul!
Ian!
Evening, Paul. Sorry to keep you waiting so long. It's been a busy night, but I'm glad you waited.
Yeah,
what you got for
us, Paul? Yeah. I work on the doors in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
And meet a lot of Irish people there, you know.
Yeah.
They come over for the hen parties and the stag parties and stuff.
Yeah, I like their hen parties.
And there's two things about the Irish. They never stop talking and they never stop drinking.
Well, both stereotypes, both possibly true.
Well, it's every single night. But, I mean, that's the culture, that's the way they are.
But then that's like saying everybody from Liverpool steals cars. It's an unfair generalisation, isn't
Listen, Ian, I gave up stealing cars when I was 13.
Oh, fair play then. No, fair. I can't counter that. Good for you. Anyway, Paul, what you got?
Well, I surfed the radio and I come across your show. And you were saying that life rubbish and you're on drugs. And I just burst out laughing. It was just so counterintuitive.
I'm on drugs.
And you're on some sort of medication or something.
Yeah.
And all the other radio stations are saying we're all so important and meaningful and significant. And you were basically saying our life's crap, you know.
Well,
and
it is for a lot of people. I'm not important, you know. I'm not important. Why would anyone be interested in what I have to say?
No, I love that honesty. I mean, it's a level of honesty that most people don't want to hit. You know, they like to live in denial about it. So it was really refreshing to hear it. But
I mean, I'm on prescribed drugs, but I don't even think I'm popping pills, you know, acid or anything like that. Those
days
are long.
Why do you think that? How long you've been on them? Do you ever talk about it? Or
I talk about it all the time. On and off for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you need them? Or are they?
I do need them. I do need them. I don't want to be on them forever. But the last time I came off them, I got very, very poorly and I was really thinking about killing myself quite a lot.
You probably need a long time to adjust back to normality.
Yeah, you do. It takes
you. It's just a question of time, you know.
Your brain has to resettle. Yeah, it is. The plan is not to be on them forever. The plan is to be on them and do a lot of work until I feel I'm strong enough that I don't need to be on them anymore.
Anyway, I went to the shop earlier on today.
Yes.
And I got 4 heavy bags of shopping. I was walking home and the heavens just opened.
Oh, man.
It was horrendous.
Yeah.
I got absolutely saturated.
Yeah.
And I just ploughed on, got home, took my clothes off and just fell asleep.
What, naked?
And just took my coat and the top layer off.
Yeah.
And I woke up and I thought, why do we live in this horrible climate? I used to have a friend who used to go to Tunisia.
Paul, stay there. I've missed all my breaks this hour, so I can. And I want to get your point about your friend in Tunisia. Give me 4 minutes. Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Wild Man of Late Night Radio is back.
Differently interesting nocturnal emissions from a legend of late night radio. Ian Lee on air and off the leash.
On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
There is a weird Twitter vibe tonight. Daniel, I'm not... I'm not falling out with you, but Daniel says that, where is it, sir? And I'm not falling out. I'm just saying this just because I'm just replying to it. Well, please stop insulting your fans when they phone up. You're giving a lot of people a hard time lately and they trust you. And I've asked for examples because I don't think I have. I'll call out people if I think they're saying something that I disagree with. And I have very little patience with drunk callers, as I have very little patience with drunk people in real life. I don't think I've insulted anyone this evening. So I've asked for examples, and he said I can't think of any examples. And I said I think you're imagining it, man, because I'm not really. I don't think I'm insulting. The insults are demeaning. Going on your show unprepared would be terrifying, humiliating. If I said the wrong thing. Again, insult might be the wrong word, but of all my complimentary tweets, you respond to this one. And I've replied, well, you've criticised me, so I'm defending myself. And also, that's an issue that I have. If you notice, most of my Twitter, and this is, fault is the wrong word, but this is an issue that I obviously have. Most of my interaction with people on Twitter will be with those that insult me. So, don't take that as a personal thing. Sometimes I retweet nice things. I don't really respond to nice things. Occasionally I do. Very occasionally I'll respond to questions about someone asked me today why I'm not on Big Brother anymore. And I said, well, they just didn't ask me back. You know, it wasn't sacked. I didn't quit. I did a series. The contract ended. They didn't offer me a new contract. That's the way this business works. You know, it's the way it works. And I just responded to that because it caught me at the right moment and I felt I could answer it in two sentences. So don't, you know, Daniel, mate, I'm going to mute him. He says, but I like that you're giving me SH1T, true to form. I've listened to you for years. I'm honoured. I'm going to suggest, Daniel, that there's stuff. I'm not going to suggest anything. But have you been drinking or smoking or something? Because now you're being random. So I'm going to mute you, Daniel. There we go. Not blocked, just muted, because I've got no idea what's going on. 0344 499 1000. Meanwhile, back in Tunisia.
He's winding you up there, Ian. I think your judgment is fair, mate.
No, I don't. My judgment, it can be a little bit skewy at times. But I've
never faulted your judgment. I think it's usually spot on.
Well, you don't. Twitter is a very strange...
I'm not flattering you there and being honest, mate.
Twitter is a very strange place. And I'm backing... I've got this new thing now. And I've been doing it for a couple of weeks and I love it. Pretty much every night or the next morning... I delete all of my tweets.
Wow.
And I don't, and someone said why, and I said, I don't really know, because you can still find them. They'll be out there somewhere, but they're not on my Twitter line. And it's just kind of like just starting each day with a clean slate, a fresh palette. I'm getting rid of all the detritus from yesterday, and it's a new day. And I don't know if that, I may be the only person in the world that does that. I don't know, but, it's working for me, Paul. You got to do what works for you.
People are contacting me on Twitter and saying, I've been reading your Twitter history, you know, what you tweet.
Yeah,
and then they comment on that. But I looked on the, it's called Analytics or something.
Yes.
And I've put 500 tweets over the last month.
Yeah.
And they've been viewed by 150,000 people.
Hey, flipping heck.
I was like, wow.
And imagine if you got a pound for every single one of those looks. Wouldn't that be
I'd
something?
Have a penny.
Yeah.
I'd have a penny, never mind a pound.
Anyway, go on, Tunisia. Sorry, you're Tunisia. Yeah, go on, carry on, Paul.
I was going to talk about Tunisia, and the first item on the news was about that massacre in Tunisia.
I know those poor people, and the stories that we've heard during this inquest and seeing the picture. I mean, imagine you're on holiday. And that kicks off. It's just that
there's been a lot of it, though, hasn't there?
There was an incredible. There was a fellow on Radio 4 who was there, right? And his wife got shot, but she was alive. And he dragged her to her. It was incredible. He dragged her to their hotel room, got her in the hotel. She was fine. I think she'd had a flesh wound. So put her in the hotel. Said, "Do not open this door." And he locked the door, and he legged it to the beach to go and help people.
Wow.
He said, "I don't know why I did it, but I ran towards the gunfire to help people." Unbelievable! I don't think I could be as brave as that. What an amazing man! And he saved a woman's life. And oh, it was incredible. I was listening to this story, thinking, "Flipping it, that's just some bloke like you, like me, on holiday with his missus, and that kicks off." Man alive! Don't bear thinking.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, Mike, before all these terrorist attacks and so on, my friend used to overwinter in Tunisia.
Yeah.
I was only a pensioner, and he used to get a deal with this hotel. It was £60 a week, full board.
Wow, what?
So we thought, I'm going to live in the sunshine.
Yeah.
And he'd come back at the end of March with a tan, a big smile on his face, looking forward to the spring. And I was thinking to myself, all these Arabs want to come and live in England. There seems to be an explosion in the number of them.
Well,
why don't we do a population exchange?
Yes. Where do you want us to go and live? I don't want to go and live in the UAE, because that's too hot.
No, Tunisia. If we can say we get 10 million Tunisians come here,
right,
and 10 million Brits can go over there, and we can live in a sunny climate.
No, and I'll tell you why, because I like this weather.
Oh,
I like it. I like it when it's grey and it's damp and it's a little bit drizzly. Not heavy rain.
It goes on, though, doesn't it? On and on.
Yeah. And I love it.
Well, what do you do in the summer then, Ian?
Well, I fret. I don't know how to respond. Because when it's cold, I put on more clothes, right? When it's wet, I put on waterproof clothes. When it's sunny, there's only so much you can take off. I don't really like the sun. We go to Greece every year because we got family over there. But while I like the food and I like, you know, the boys like the freedom and it's nice to see the family, the heat, I just can't. That thing when you've got to go and lie down for 2 hours. Yeah, I don't like it, Paul. So you can go.
I like it in the spring, though. I like it in the springtime.
Yeah.
Like, I go to Mallorca or Spain in October, and it's beautiful then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too hot for me in the midsummer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you had the choice to emigrate then, would you go north to a colder climate or maybe Russia or somewhere?
Well, I mean, if I was going to emigrate.
Oh, this is perfect.
No, if I was going to emigrate, it would be Tokyo. And Tokyo.
Tokyo.
Tokyo, I think, is on a similar. What do they call the line? Not the equator.
Latitude.
Yeah.
Latitude.
I think it's on a similar latitude.
It's a bit further south than us. I think it's a bit further south.
Is it? Because
much hotter summers,
They have hotter summers, but they also have the wet autumns. It gets really wet in the autumn, but not like monsoon wet, but it's kind of wet and rainy. Is it a bit lower, is it? Yeah, no, I'd go there, Paul, I think.
Have you ever lived in Tokyo?
No, I've been there, and I learnt the language for a bit. I can't speak it now. And me and my missus talked about moving there, but there were issues with my mum being ill, and then we had a baby, and then life got in the way. But there was talk of moving there for a year. Definitely.
Man alive, that's
But you'd go to Spain, would you?
No, I go to the Carolinas in America. They're beautiful.
Oh, Carolina.
They're perfect.
I don't know the
Carolinas. South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've never been there. I don't know them.
I went there in April, and it was like walking into paradise. It was so beautiful, and it's perfect.
Right, this is what we're doing. This is what we do, Paul. Yeah. And talk radio, pay for it, right? You're going to go to the Carolinas, north or south. You've got to choose. You're going to go for a year. I'm going to go to Tokyo for a year. We'll come back, and in a year's time, we'll compare notes and see who had the best time. How about that?
You know what? How'd you get on with the Japanese? I mean, people say the Japanese are a different breed. You know, they're pretty close people and stuff.
No, they're
just such an alien culture.
No. I found the Japanese to be the most I genuinely found them an inspiration in their treatment of tourists, right? We'd be in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And we'd be stood there with them. And this happened so many times, but we stood there with a map. And people would come up to you, and they couldn't speak English very well.
Oh, not very polite.
Oh, but they would approach us. And number one, me and my wife were trying to find this club, this small music club, because I'd emailed a band that I like saying we were going to be there. They put on a show for us, right? They actually put on a show for me and my missus. And we stood there with this map, and this Japanese woman came over, and she said, I don't speak English very well, but can I help? And she looked at it, she went, I can't wear this. So she phoned up the number of the club, and she was talking to this guy, and she said, it's quite a way away, follow me and I'll take you. And me and my wife, instantly thinking, oh, hang on a minute, this is a scam. We're holding on to our wallets and our purses.
Like that.
And we got to the club, and she went, here it is, hope you have a nice evening, and she walked off. And we said, can we buy you a drink? And she went, oh, no, and she walked off. And it was a 20-minute walk, Paul. She walked us 20 minutes out of her way. And we had that loads of times.
The Japanese are very hospitable. But can you have a soul-to-soul with them? Can you get under the skin and really find out what they're thinking?
The language prohibited that. Even the ones that spoke English well, the language prohibited that. But I've got friends in Japan because of that, the two or three times I've been there that I still speak to now, you know.
Paul, I've never been to Japan. I'd love to go.
Do it. Okay, I'll speak to you in a year, Paul. Thank you very much. Enjoy the Carolinas. Let's go to Dennis.
Good morning.
Good evening, Dennis.
I'm sorry to hear that you're having to take tablets to look after you.
Here we go. Here we go. Here comes some old-fashioned advice. Yes, don't be sorry.
Oh, I'm not. I'm just saying I'm sorry that having to do that.
It's okay.
You're a nice bloke. I don't give a sod what anybody else says about you.
Who you been talking to?
I know, you're a nice fella. You've treated me very well whenever we've met.
I treat you mean, Dennis, and I keep you keen.
No, it's not that, but I'm sorry. And I've been to Japan. I went to Japan when it just been flattened.
Oh, flipping it, blimey, I bet you did, yes. Different world.
Very nice people, because we just knocked them into shape, you know. But no, that was the one I went on holidays.
Yes.
We were on the QE2.
Yeah.
There was an American lady on there. It was on it permanently.
What? Well, she lived on it?
Yep.
No.
Yeah, because we sat talking to her. She said, yes, my family got me together and said, look, Dad had just died. He said, you spent a lot of time on the QE2 when together.
Yeah.
Why don't you sell up, go on there permanently, just keep going around the world and we'll
hang on a minute. Does it? So the QE2 goes around the world forever. It must dock for like a few months in the winter.
No, it keeps moving most of the time.
No.
It could go ashore.
Like
but
a shark.
Every so often.
Yeah.
The family would join her and go for a couple of weeks on there. So she was quite happy.
No, I don't... Surely, during the winter, it must just park up and have a rest.
Well, even so, you're still on board and you're still being fed.
Oh.
All the entertainment's going. As far as I know, it kept moving.
Isn't that funny? I'd love to...
Great, I'd love to have done that myself. But...
Yeah, do you know what? I don't want to... I want to go on a cruise.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind going on a cruise just to see what it's...
Great.
Well, it'd be full of old people like you, though, wouldn't it?
No, it's not full of old people like me.
Well, youngsters people. In their 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And younger than that.
Well,
no.
65.
No, my friends and I, we danced around the world. We went dancing every night, you know, go to it. It's a great life.
Dennis, always a pleasure to talk to you, mate.
Thank you very much, and good night.
Don't be bum. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Unmissable Late Night Radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Evening, dear listener. Catherine, please, come join me in here. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. Two things we've got, I know that we've got lined up for tomorrow. Two things. One, the top of the show tomorrow evening, it means at 10 o'clock, we have a flat earther coming on somewhere. It's a theme that we look at from time to time. And it's a young lady who believes the earth is flat. Now, I haven't spoken to her. She seems very nice. I'm now a Facebook friend. I need to end that. Because I don't like Facebook. I don't do Facebook. Let me just move the camera around a bit. So I'm looking forward to talking to her, and also I don't, you know, I'm going to be gentle with her because she seems like a very delightful lady, and I don't know, you know, exactly what's going on. So we'll suss it out. But she's coming on tomorrow if people want to talk to her. And then tomorrow night, I thought we could do a phone in. It was kind of fermented in my brain When we were seeing Neil Hannon of the Divine Comedy, or the Divine Comedy, and a tweet someone said, and I can't remember exactly what the tweet was, but it's got me thinking, what is, and we won't do it tonight, okay, so I'm just throwing this out, this is tomorrow night, what is the most, if you want to be a pop star, what's the most successful first name you should have? And I would go in, and we're not playing it now, this is tomorrow night, I would go in hard on Neil. Neil Diamond. Neil Hannon. Neil Innes. There's another Neil.
Sedaka.
Neil Sedaka. Four Neils. You try thinking of four Pauls. Paul McCartney.
Paul Simon. Paul...
Do you see what I mean?
Wait.
This is tomorrow's show. Stop there. This is tomorrow's show. After we've done the Flat
Anchor.
Earther. I beg your pardon, Catherine.
Paul Anchor.
I beg your pardon. Well, I wouldn't say Paul Anchor was pop.
Well, he can be.
What was Paul Anchor? Well, Paul Anchor translated the French lyrics of My Way into My Way for Sinatra. Yeah. Sinatra said he was the best singer after him. Paul Anchor's still going. See if we can get Paul Anchor on the
Did
show.
Did you ever hear that that swing, was it called? Rock and Swing,
was
it called?
Yeah, he did like pop songs. Yeah.
I quite liked that.
That was good. I've got it.
A bit of fun. His version of Smells Like Teen Spirit was hilarious.
Here we go. Hang on a minute. Let me get my hard drive out. Other guests that we were looking at. Des O'Connor.
Yes.
Did you email Des?
No, I emailed myself telling myself to do
okay.
that. I will.
Des O'Connor, I think, would be a lot of fun. So I'm just getting my bits and pieces out from my bag. Let's see if I've got my hard drive. I left the house today and went to see my man and without my wallet.
You idiot.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't get any breakfast. And there's a drive-through Costa that I go to, and I made my order. And then I said, oh, I'm really sorry. I don't think I... Well, I said, oh, I can't find my wallet. Let me just pull over around the corner. And oh, there it is. And, and I couldn't find it, so I just drove off. And the thing is... I've got good skills in that drive-through. I make them laugh, really make those people laugh because I'm just a little bit wacky. At the
do you order. Let them have your name?
No, just say hello. Yes, do you do coffee? Yes, you sound very cheery today. I'm a bit annoying. Yeah. Okay, so this is that Paul Anchor classic songs, My Way. Here we go. Who is? I mean, it's great. Here we go. Do you know what song this is?
It's proper busy, isn't it?
Lying in my bed, I hear.
Brilliant!
Can I think of you? Caught up in circles, confusion is nothing new. Flashback.
All right, is that?
Yeah.
There we go, isn't it? This is a good one. This is great.
Get on with it.
Coming out of my cage, I'm doing just fine.
You know
this? I gotta be down. I'm wanting it all. I started out with a kiss. How did it end up like this? Only a kiss. It was only a kiss. Now I'm falling asleep and she's calling a cab. He's having a smoke and she's taking a drag. They're going to bed and my stomach is sick. It's all in my head. She's touching his chest now. And he takes off her dress now.
I can't remember who does this.
That Killers.
Is it Killers?
I just can't look because it's killing me.
Goes on and on. But then there was a guy, what's his name? It's not Eugene Cheese.
Mike Flowers.
No, not Mike Flowers. Pops. I mean, that was flipping it. No,
Eugene Cheese. You told me
Cheese,
that before.
No, Eugene Cheese was a comedian who was a bit miserable. Cheese. What was his name? Dear listener, 03444991000. What was the name of the guy? Is that Barry Cheese? Richard Cheese. That was it.
Richard Cheese.
But he did. He was quite. Okay, let's hover over the dump because he's quite sweary. Let's see how this goes.
Richard Cheese and Lounge Against
the
Machine.
My milkshake brings all the boys in the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I can teach you, but I have to charge. I know you want it. The thing that makes me what the guys go crazy for. They lose their minds the way I want.
I mean, that's the act. Here we go. I've done that.
Do you know one of my favourite my favourite retro?
You would have heard that on Periscope. You wouldn't have heard that.
My favourite retro act, those are Pupini Sisters. Do you remember when they first came out?
Yeah, yeah.
And they did
good.
Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
They were good. I liked them, actually. I interviewed them. Here we go. This one should be safe. Hang on a second. Do we have some delay? Yes, we have some delay. Okay. here we go. One more. I remember discovering this guy years ago. Let's have one more. Let's see where we go with this.
I know what this is already.
It's gone ballad style. That's all right, isn't it? I think it jumps up, doesn't it?
You better do what you can. Don't want to see no blood. Don't be a macho man. You want to be tough. Better do what you can. So beat it. But you want to be bad. Come on, children. Just beat it.
It's good.
Do you know what's great about that song?
Yeah.
Not just the arrangement, but the fact that you can hear what the words are. Because everyone knows Beat It, right? Yeah. Everyone knows all the Michael Jackson songs. I would challenge anyone to be able to tell you what the lyrics are half the time.
I would not know that. It's good. I remember getting into Hume when we moved into Tapper Towers. So that would have been about second series of the 11 o'clock show. Third series, 11 o'clock show. And it was when Amazon was still quite new, but you could order stuff from America. Yeah. So you ordered loads of VHS tapes from America, of all these films like Clockwork Orange and The Exorcist that we couldn't get over here, all this stuff. And I ordered loads of them. And I also got into this guy. There's a guy, and I think he's still around, called Jandek, right? And he just released all his own CDs at a time when it was unusual for people to release their own CDs. But they were all completely unlistenable. I wonder, hang on, Jandek, I mean, now we are getting niche. Here we go, Jandek, this is a song taken at random. Here we go. What can I say? What can I sing? By Jandek. Here we go.
Oh, bloody.
Mm-hmm. thought of it. He's released about 70 albums, all like that. Jandek. Let's get Jandek on the show, huh?
How many did you buy?
I bought two. I've never listened to them, but I was into getting those things. I tell you what we'll do. We'll have a quick break. I can see some of you getting excited at the prospect of Des O'Connor. We don't know yet, but we're going to send him an email. We'll have a little break, and then we'll come back and we'll kick some names around. If you want to join us, kicking some names around, 0344 499 1000, Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0344991000 is the telephone number. If you want to give us a call, you're more than welcome to. You may not want to. Ah, water. 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 Or did I miss out some of the number? What did I say, Ed? Well, tell me what I said. Say it on the... Open the microphone. Don't whisper it in my ear.
It's 0344...
Yeah.
499.
What did I say?
You missed out the 44.
Oh, okay. Well, you know... It's been a long day. it's funny. Yes, 0344. 499 1000 is, you know, it's the last 28 minutes of the show, so my brain is slowly shutting down. I should just say, dear listener, podcasts are plenty, of course. If you want podcasts of the show, we tend to release two podcasts a day. There'll be a best of. Yesterday's best of is interesting, don't you think? And if we have a guest on, then the guest goes out as well. So Eddie Large will go out tonight as tomorrow will go out as a bonus podcast, and then we'll also be a best of. That tends to be the way that we're doing. If you want to get the podcasts, iTunes. Can someone explain to me? Right, I'm talking to you now, dear listener. Why you don't like iTunes? Because I always thought that Apple were the alternative to Microsoft. That they were the kind of... Because it was... Is Linux based? Is it? Is it? Is it? Is it? And that Apple was kind of like the sort of cult version, you know, the underdog. But I get so many people going, I hate iTunes. They're twats and they rip us off. But I mean, it's fair enough. You can get the podcast in other places, Pocket Cast and Podcatcher and all these other places you can find this show. But I do wonder, don't tweet me because I'm bored with reading Twitter. Call me if you want or not. I'm not fussed. But I do wonder why some people are so aggressively against Apple and iTunes. I mean, I don't understand it. And whenever I post a link, I use iTunes, so that's the link I post on my Facebook page. And I always generally write, it's available on other podcast things, and someone says, can someone post a link for it there's something that isn't Apple-owned, refuse to have that filth on my computer. Because I'm like, well, okay, yeah, I can try and find a link, or just go to where you normally get podcasts, and type in Ian Lee, and it will pop up there. Hopefully, hopefully. So, guests for the show, Des O'Connor, I gave you another name the other day, and you've forgotten. I knew you'd forget. Outrageous.
No, I've sent myself emails. Hang on.
Well, get the email. I said, Des O'Connor.
Right.
And there was someone else I thought would be... I mean, Des has worked with Buddy Holly, for crying out loud. We can spend 30 minutes talking to him about Buddy Holly. We've got Bernie Clifton this week, yes. Which is something special. Rick Wakeman, which maybe when I come back, I'm going anywhere. I'm just going to be in bed. I'm in bed for a week. Beautiful. Can't think of anything better.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? That's become a luxury to...
That's a luxury. Bed for a week. I've got Netflix and chill. I'm going to do with myself.
Well, it's time with someone you love, isn't it?
Pornhub and chill.
God.
Gonna be my week, and I'm looking forward to it. Who's the other person? Okay, I'm going to give you some names now. Here we go.
Go on.
0344 499 1000. If you want to join in, Des O'Connor,
uh-huh.
Neil Sedaka,
right?
mm-hmm. That'll do.
Can't think.
Well, these things occur to us at strange times.
Well, and then I tell them to you, and you say you've jotted them down, and then you haven't, and that's fine. There was someone else. Who was it? There was someone else. Well, we've got to chase up Bobby Ball. We've got a name to chase now.
Yes. I've emailed Kelly Monteith. That's going to be
Kelly Monteith is coming on. Let's go for Ross Abbott. A few people have suggested Ross Abbott, and I've been cogitating in my head, but actually that would be. I got told off in school once for singing the Russ Abbott theme tune, so...
Oh, really?
There's my in.
You can blame him.
I will. Oi, Russ! You got me. I think I might have got a slap for that as well. A slap,
hey,
imagine.
Gosh, the olden days.
There we go. Here's one. Roy Hudd. Put Roy Hudd on that list. And these are, but we don't know if these people are going to say yes or no, that, you know, that, but we've had a really good lucky
streak.
Strike. We've struck it lucky. Barrymore. Hang on a second. Now, he follows me on Twitter.
Have you met him?
I don't think I have met Barrymore. Now, obviously, I am aware that, you know, there is a big glaring thing in Barrymore's history. But if I've got this correct, he's been, you know, there is no shadow over him, cast over him, that there was for a significant period of time. He is, you know, able to walk erect in the sunlight. You know, what I'm saying is that because for a long time there was the shadow of the death of Stuart Lubbock, I think the gentleman's name was. But I think that has since been proven that you know, was just a tragic, and I hope I'm not doing anyone a disservice, a tragic accident, you know, in unfortunate circumstances.
Yep. In October 2016, it was reported that High Court papers show police admit Barrymore was wrongfully arrested and detained.
Let's get Barrymore then. Let's get Barrymore. I would feel uncomfortable. I would Barrymore to one side. I would feel uncomfortable talking to a celebrity who had been involved in an horrendous crime. But yes, I remember. I thought that was what happened recently with Michael Barrymore. That he was completely vindicated is the word. Thank you. It popped into my head. Vindicated. I'd like to talk to Barrymore.
All right.
Actually,
let's see.
He follows me on Twitter, bizarrely, and tweets me from time to time.
Well,
shall I send him a message? See if he fancies it.
I think it might be better coming from
you. Yeah, I will send him a message because, again, Barrymore's huge. Huge. Strike It Lucky, which I quite like. I never really liked ITV game shows, but I quite liked Strike It Lucky. I thought it was nonsense. And when Barrymore was riffing, right? When he was really riffing, and I think he's talked about doing drugs in the past, but when he was really on the ball and was improvising, a tall, lanky, thin man just going nuts in a studio, it was a sight to behold. Mm-hmm. You know, in the same way, now this gentleman has got a shadow cast over him, Freddie Starr. Freddie Starr, when he was riffing, when he was on form and improvising, he was an unstoppable force. I always thought there was an element of meanness about Freddie Starr. Yeah. I always thought there was a dark undercurrent to his comedy that you didn't get with Barrymore.
I thought I could sense an aggression in
him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Barrymore didn't have that aggression. Barrymore, it was... remember when Barrymore came out as gay? He was outed. I don't know.
Yeah.
He probably outed, wasn't he, in those times? And that was a huge... thing that guys, you know, with the fact that Larry Grayson and Russell Harty were as camp as Christmas,
you were allowed to be. Well, they weren't gay, were they?
No, they were just
a little bit whoopsie.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
everyone
they weren't gay.
Found it fine as long as they were hilarious.
But when Barrymore was outed, I'm going to assume he was outed unless he tells me otherwise, it was a real touch and go moment as to whether he'd still have a career. Imagine that. Yeah, I'd be I'm feeling a bit nervous at the prospect of interviewing Michael Barrymore.
That's a good thing.
I do find him quite intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, well, let's I'll send him a little message.
Do.
And
see what he has to say.
He'd be a good one.
Late Nights with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Unmissable Late Night Radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Last 15 minutes or so of the show before the two mics come in and start shouting at each other. I need to calm down. I need to take a chill pill. 0344 499 1000. Evening, Ray.
Good evening. Have you got a set age range for the people you want to sort of invite onto your show?
A set age range?
Yeah, you know, sort of, obviously, your likes of Eddie Large and Tommy Cannon are sort of both in their 70s. So you look
no, at that's just... No, that's just kind of where our head is at the moment. You know, we're sort of thinking in that age range because that's where our head is at. No, if people are good, then I want them on.
Because two come to mind. One is that in that age range, and it was a good old-fashioned entertainer. It's Tom O'Connor, another O'Connor.
Yeah, someone else has suggested that. Like I did with Russ Abbott, I need to kick that around in my head a little bit more. Because I need to know if I can make a connection with them. And I think I could make a connection with Russ Abbott. I could certainly make a connection with Barrymore. I'm not sure if I could connect with Tom O'Connor. So I just need to... yes, it's in there and it's floating around. Thank you.
And one more, just quickly, who's younger, so he's only in his mid-50s, but a good entertainer from the 90s, Brian Connolly.
Yeah. Conley. I don't think Conley would do it.
No,
I don't think he would. Put him down, Kath, because I would like to talk to Conley, actually, because I know Conley's had, he's had struggles.
Yeah, he has.
He has mental health issues and things, and,
But a real old-fashioned good entertainer.
Yeah, he was, and the 90s, I was kind of turning my nose up at that kind of stuff, so I never really gave Conley much time of the day, which I think is a shame, because... Annie, can you call back? We can't get through to you. Which is a shame, because he had a sketch show, he did impressions, he had a chat show, then he went off and did Jolson and turned his back on TV for too long, and they forgot about him, which is a shame. That's an excellent suggestion, Ray. Yes, definitely. Yeah. We'll put that down.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers. There we go. It's as simple as that. You know, I don't think Conley would do it for some reason. I don't know why I think that, but...
Well, we can only ask, can't we?
Yeah, well, this is it. Well, you know, we've been spoilt recently by the number of people that have gone, yeah, okay, yeah, fine. When do you want us? You know, it's been an absolute joy.
Jill Gibson almost didn't.
Aye.
But what an interview that is.
Honestly,
you wait till you hear that.
We're saving that because it's going to blow your tiny mind. I've never heard such an open and frank interview from someone who was involved in the 60s pop scene. As we have with Jill. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. I'm trying to think of, and I know we're not treading on
Bob.
Bob. I was thinking Bill. Why can't I think of Bill's last name? Because his first name is
Bill Mills.
Bill Mobbs, I was thinking of. Bob Mills. We're not treading on his toes. You know, if you want to hear I know that I think Eddie Large has been on his show, yeah, but that's fine.
But they'll have a different chat.
Yeah, me and Bob. I hope you would agree too, dear listener, that me and Bob, our interview style, and I use that word just because it's late and I can't be bothered to think properly, is completely different, and we are big fans of Bob. We want Bob on the show.
All right.
Ask Bob if he'll come on and have
a chat.
We'll
love it.
Yeah, I know.
He's like,
we're big fans of talk radio at the weekend. There's some gems, right? There's some gems.
Howard this weekend was brilliant.
Oh, flipping heck, man. Howard, right. So the gems, let me just finish that thought, then we'll get to Howard. Bob Mills is on 7 till 10 on a Sunday, and it's brilliant. And we keep banging on about it, and I cannot sing the praises of that show enough. Howard Hughes afterwards, the unexplained with Howard Hughes. And we'll get Howard on when he's up for it. We'll get Howard back on, because I enjoyed that chat. He had this fella on, right? And Annie, I'll come to you in a second. He had this fella on, and I was driving home, and I stopped off to get a Burger King after performing the thing. Yeah. And I was eating my Burger King, and I texted Kath saying, Kath, whatever you're doing, you've got to listen to Talk Radio now. So he had this fella on, right, who reckoned that he could... Right. He
had these lucid dreams,
well,
didn't he?
He thought, it's really hard to explain what was happening. He could communicate with the dead, and the dead were going to, like, big moments in history to play. So you would go to, like, the Battle of Iwo Jima, or you'd go to the Titanic, like it was a theme park, right? But because you're dead, you could go to those moments in history and live them and get shot and drown and stuff, but you were dead, so it didn't matter. And he somehow managed to slip into these states, and he ended up in the Battle of Iwo Jima with all these dead people. Next day, what happened? Now, what... The bit he kind of brushed over was... He'd had cancer, so I'm imagining there were some strong drugs involved at some point.
But he said this happened long after.
Yeah. Before going to bed, he'd read a book about Iwo Jima, and then suddenly he would be in the Battle of Iwo Jima.
Or having a dream about Iwo Jima.
Thank you very much indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Surely, because if I read a book or watch a film, I fall asleep, and the odds are... I'm going to have a dream where I'm in that book or in that film.
And then in this dream stroke game state that he was in, or whatever you want to call it, they were saying, now read a book about this. Well, they were telling him which books to read, weren't they, apparently, so that he could experience other things.
And how?
And then, what was that bit about the one of the guys that kept recurring in these things, coming back with him, and Howard said, and could anyone else see, whatever his name was, Richard, anyway? No, he was the size of four particles.
Oh, yeah. That was when I was making my order, so I tuned up. I just got the end of that. I was like, what? What? And a fair play, he got an hour of radio out of it.
He messed with my melon.
It was incredible. Evening, Annie.
Evening, Ian. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Good, very good. I'm definitely sober, by the way, just in case you were concerned.
Thank you.
I do my best.
Excellent.
I was right at the beginning of your show. Yeah, you were talking about the guy that was on yesterday.
Yeah.
And so it got me thinking, there's a call that you had on a while ago, it would have been a few weeks ago now, I haven't quite got out of my head, and I was just wondering, I didn't know whether or not she'd call back at any point.
Oh, go on. Laura.
Lorna, it was Lorna.
Lorna, wasn't it? Funnily enough, I was given a talk at a university, and I played a clip of Lorna to illustrate how... If your audience will trust you, they will tell you the most intimate things, and you have no idea where a phone call is going to go.
Yeah.
And no, she hasn't. She hasn't got back. And I know that night she was on the Talk Radio listeners Facebook page.
Right.
And so after the phone call, she posted on Facebook, and I clicked on her profile and looked at a picture. She's only a young girl. I say young, early 20s, something like.
Yeah.
She looked like. But no, she hasn't called back, and I hope she does call back, and I hope she's all right, and part of me worries that maybe I scared her away, you know, maybe I was a bit too aggressive, but...
I don't know, I wouldn't say that. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because she was looking for somewhere to put all this stuff that was going on in her head, and she had nowhere else to put it.
Yeah.
She found somewhere to put it, but I think what you did was you were honest with her, and a lot of other people wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah, I worry if I so need a week off, and I was talking to my agent today about whether I keep doing this show, because I tell you why, because the emotional strain of talking to people like that, and I do worry sometimes. Like the fella yesterday with the chip in his arm, like Lorna, like other people we've had, I do worry sometimes if I'm doing more harm than good by talking to them.
Yeah. I get that concern, but I'm not sure that's possible, to be honest. And I'm not saying that in a flippant way.
No.
Because you're right, because if you're not trained in that field and you don't know the history and there isn't... somebody sitting in front of you, but at the same time, if they're looking for someone to talk to and you're willing to listen, that can only be a positive thing, surely.
Yeah, I think
with somebody like Lorna and the guy that phoned last night, if they're calling a radio show to talk about it, that kind of suggests they've got nowhere else to go with it.
Yeah.
So it is a positive thing that you've given them somewhere to go with it.
I don't know. I do... Well, thank you, Annie. I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
It is true, and I think especially with someone like Lorna, I think in a lot of other places, some other people could have said similar things to her, and she possibly wouldn't have listened. And I think she needed that level of honesty.
I hope she's
and
all right.
And an opportunity to go and kind of look at the situation. And it was no good just giving her blind sympathy, because that wasn't going to help. She needed to be able to look at Because one of the things that stood out for me was when she admitted she'd been told, she'd been given this news that she might be losing her children, or that was what she was facing, and then you were able to point out to her, and her first reaction to that was to drink.
Yeah.
And that's not a positive reaction, and somebody needs to be telling her that.
Yeah, I hope she's all right. I hope she's all right, you know. But then, Annie, thank you.
If she does go onto the Facebook page and stuff like that, maybe she'll come back at some point. And
I hope she's all right. I'm sure she'll call in at some point. And you're a very kind person for remembering her, Annie. So thank you for that.
That's okay.
Cheers. Take care. Bye bye. Nice people. I do wonder. I'm trying not to make it about me, but I guess I have to make it about me to a certain extent. I do find it emotionally draining.
Yeah.
I doing this show when we're dealing with stuff like that.
But that's because you care about it.
Well, yeah, and it would be nice to be able to distance myself slightly. And also, you know, I'm having stuff going on in my head and my life as well, which is... but, yeah, I did speak to my agent and say, I don't know if I can keep on doing this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's bigger than what I am capable of. Sometimes I think that.
Yeah, but you're honest about it. And, you know, you never come on here purporting to be an agony uncle.
Well.
But the thing is, Ian.
Yes, Catherine.
Because you give of yourself, other people feel inclined to confide in you.
What about people who can't clap?
Nicole, all right, we're changing the subject.
Nicole Kidman clapping like that.
Like the Grinch.
Do you see the fingers?
Yes.
I love Nicole. Can I just say this? I don't know if I've ever said this.
Well,
I think Nicole Kidman is the most beautiful woman in the world. Have I said that before?
Today you think it's her.
I think she's stunning.
I think she spoiled herself with Botox and fillers.
I nearly said something terrible there, and I'm improving as a human being.
I know exactly what you're saying.
If this was Quantum Leap, I'd leap now because I didn't say it. Oh, boy. People who famously can't clap. Louis Walsh claps like that. Does that, doesn't it?
Oh, there was a really funny one the other day. Who was it? Oh, they always end up as GIFs, don't they, on Twitter?
Yep.
It's like, what's this? I think with Nicole, what was going on there is because she had chunky rings on. She didn't want to smack them together.
Yeah, Hollywood, the movies.
But she has got long fingers. It did accentuate the older.
Yeah, good for her. She goes out with that country and western
married
singer.
Married him.
Yeah, they're dating. He's an alcoholic.
She's married him.
Yep, and they're coursing, and I think that's lovely, and I wish them all the very best of luck.
They're doing all right, they're married.
Yep, and if it all goes pear-shaped, which it probably will, it often does in... when you're going out with a country and western singer. 03444991000. Nicole is the telephone number. Don't phone next week because it'll be Jake Yap. Imagine if I come back in next... Right,
and Jake Yap's married to
Jake
Nicole.
Jake Yap is married to Nicole. That would be... What a cruel irony that would be. That would be absolutely awful. Well, we finished. We kind of, you know, gently stumbled in to the sidings, and we are now going home. Dear listener, thank you so much for your company. It has been appreciated. I'm just saying words to Phil. I've got Phil for 40
He's looking at the clock.
30 seconds, and that's all I'm doing. I don't mean any of this. It's the most insincere goodbye that has ever... Whenever a presenter is saying goodbye and thanking you, we don't care. It's meaningless.
I care.
No, you don't. She's saying that, but she doesn't care.
No, I mean it most sincerely.
You're not a presenter. Well, you're not. You've not.
No,
you've
I know.
You've not. You've not got that je ne sais quoi.
No.
Speaking of je ne sais quoi, here's two short men shouting at each other.
Talk Radio.
Join the Talk Nation.
Dial up and Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.